This show is a proud member of the Nerdy Legion Podcast Network. Get more at nerdylegion.com. Enjoy the show!
Spoiler alert! What Did You Watch This Week is a candid discussion about recent movies and TV shows, and it may contain spoilers if you haven't watched them yet. Listen at your own risk.
Saluting me?
No, I hit the record button and then I moved my hand to make sure it was on interview for both microphones.
Yeah, but you didn't just move your hand. You were like, it was like a flare. Like, hi.
Well, that's not what it was supposed to be. Okay. All right.
I have to translate for the listeners.
Anyhow.
Our readers want to know.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to episode 169.
Yeah, we're children.
What did you watch this week? My name is Mike.
My name is John. And 169, Mike?
Yeah, do it.
It's not just creepy.
It's not.
It's not just kinky.
No.
It's also a baker's dozen, baker's dozen. Yes, it is.
Baker's dozen of episodes.
Yes. That's a lot.
That's a lot. That is a lot.
You know, back in the day when I was like, when I'd say to somebody, oh, I'm going to record my podcast. And they're like, oh, you have a podcast? And I'd be like, yeah, we've done, you know, a dozen episodes or so. They're like, oh, that's so cute. Yeah. Now I'm like, yeah, we've done 169 episodes. They're like, oh. Oh, so you really do have a podcast.
Yeah, cool.
We've stood some test of time.
Over 3 years, yeah.
By your standards, yes, we do have a podcast.
Yes, exactly. So when they ask me, like, oh, I want to know what you think about, I'm going to see Toy Story 4 tonight at the drive-in with my family. And it's like, oh, I want to know what you hear about Toy Story 4. I want to know what you think about it. Okay, cool. In a couple weeks, you can listen to it on the show.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm not giving this away for free. I'm giving it away for free on the podcast.
On a later date.
That's right.
So you can get me that precious download.
Yeah.
So this is actually almost 2 weeks since we last recorded because of how
the scheduling works.
My cycle works and everything with work and whatnot.
Your menstrual cycle.
I specifically said work.
Yeah.
Anyhow. But I managed to watch I'm going to quantify it as a shit ton.
Yeah. Yeah. I got quite a bit in there as well. You know, one episode here of this, two episodes here of this, but, I definitely got at least one movie to talk about and I got some, a couple of series to talk about, entire series runs to talk about.
Yeah. Me too.
And I really want to dedicate some time to them. So,
okay. Well, I mean, realistically, we have a lot to talk about. I watched a lot I watched all of Star Trek Discovery Seasons 1 and 2.
As did I.
I watched all of Stranger Things Season 3.
It's Stranger Things 3.
Sorry, I watched all of Stranger Things 3.
Yeah, they're very specific about that. They're not seasons.
Right, that's true.
They consider them like movies.
Right. However, although those were a lot of episodes to take in, like, I didn't watch I watched a great number of things, but not a great number of different things.
Correct. Yes. Yeah.
Yep. So, however, I did actually catch up on The Detour.
Oh, good.
Yeah.
So, the last episode that you watched, did you watch The BJ? The one with the strip club?
Yes, I did. Yeah.
Okay, then you are caught up.
Fuck. Jeez, crow. This season of this show, is this supposed to be the last season?
I hope not.
Okay, me too.
Wow.
This season of the show is absolutely tremendous.
And it seems to have shifted gears completely. Like, the first couple episodes of the season, it was all about finding Delilah, you know? And taking their apparently disposable income. I don't know where they're getting the money for three of them to fly around the world like that, to Japan, Nepal, New Zealand. I mean, going crazy, trying to find Delilah, even though any idiot could look at her videos and say, yeah, those are kind of green screened.
Right, yeah. In fact, it was one of the people said, mentioned something about, oh, it's mini golf.
Yeah.
Like, she's, and then he realized, oh, wait, she's in our home city.
Syracuse, New York.
At the mini golf course that has all the different things.
Yeah.
Staying with my mom.
Yep. Wearing different wigs.
Yeah.
So we're focusing on that. And then all of a sudden, out of the blue, we get introduced to Robin's identical twin sister.
BJ, yeah.
Blue Jay.
Blue Jay, yeah. Which,
of course, it would be Robin and Blue Jay.
Right. And my favorite part is when, what the hell's his name?
Nate.
Like, something happens, and they meet her, and it's like, oh, he gets hit by a car.
By her.
He gets hit by a car by her, and this and that, and he's like, oh, it's my identical twin sister, and he goes, jump the shark?
Exactly.
Yeah, like, in his dazed stupor, he mumbles, like, I'm jumping the shark now, are we?
It's a good point.
Yeah, because they put up a missing persons flyer for Delilah, but these detective guys, quote fingers, mistaken Delilah for Robin.
Who were okay, they were redneck, white trash guys from Trailer Park.
Yeah.
But B, one of them was Keith from Scrubs.
Yes.
And that was just awesome seeing him as this character.
But they mistaken the Robin for Delilah, but then they mistaken Blue Jay for Robin for Delilah.
Yeah.
And so they bring her to the trailer park. Oh, there she is. She's leaving now in that car. Nate runs her down to try and stop her and then gets hit by the car. And it's Robin's, like we said, identical twin sister. And then this whole business happens. We meet her husband, who is like babbling incoherently and can't walk. And
he's almost like a child in a man's body who has been severely brain traumatized.
Right,
some of the interactions were absolutely hilarious.
Yes.
Like, he's got two steps into the basement, which is his man cave, but he has to sit on one of those electronic chairs that takes you up and down.
Oh, my God,
and he gets in there, and he straps himself in, and then he's like, because he has a helmet that he needs, and Nate puts it on. And Nate keeps like, really, it's two steps. You can't. Yeah. No, can't be too careful.
Yeah.
My bones are jelly. And then he rides down to the bottom and smells cheese and wants to go back upstairs for his cheese, gets back to the top in the electric chair again, and then goes, oh, it's downstairs. I can smell it. Hold on. And then he comes back. It was just some
of the
world riot.
It was absurd.
But then we find out why.
Yeah. What is it that she does? Blue Jay somehow sucks the life out of the guys?
She sucks the testosterone out of them.
Testosterone out of them somehow.
Yeah, she drains them of all of their testosterone.
Like, how do you do that?
I'm not sure.
They show Robin a picture of her husband, what he looked like before. And he was like some skinny, fit rocker dude, long hair, played the guitar in a band. Everyone loved him, you know. Was eloquent in his speech, and now he's a blob.
Yep.
How do you suck the testosterone out of someone?
I mean, the easy answer would be, like, I don't know. Because it's not just, like, milking a goat.
No.
It's not just, you know, have a lot of sex with them so that they...
Right.
It would have to be something. And then she, what, sells the testosterone, did they say?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then she basically drains somebody dry and then, you know...
Moves on to the next guy.
Yep.
Yeah. So, Robin and BJ go out. She does some karaoke. Something happens.
They get a lot of what's up shots.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And then... Because when we first meet BJ, she's the prim and proper and, you know, kind of almost like hoity-toity type girl.
She's got a southern accent because, as they explained, she was raised in Tennessee for like a year or two, and for some reason the accent stuck.
Yeah.
Until she doesn't want to use it.
Right. But for whatever reason, she just seems very nice and southern bellish, and then all of a sudden.
Which Nate's like, oh, this is great.
Yeah.
You know, it's like a nice version of my jerk wife.
Yeah. And then she turns and flips, and now she's crazy, and. She knocks Robin out and handcuffs her to, like, a car and goes and cuts her.
In an old barn.
Yeah, and goes and cuts her. Which she says she's got to do.
Yeah.
And then does it. And then she goes and cuts her hair. And then her and Nate take off together to go look for Delilah. And they leave their son with his mom. And
Jesus.
And then this whole episode called the BJ, she spends the whole episode trying to have sex with Nate.
Now, what I found particularly funny about this is that... You know, Nate doesn't recognize that this is not his wife.
Right.
And she's acting very wild and like, hey, she says, let's do something we've never done together. Let's do cocaine. And he goes, you've done cocaine. She goes, we've never done it together. He goes, we did it the day that we met. She's like, well, come on, let's just revisit it. Now, a normal person would be like, this is odd behavior. But Robin is so dysfunctional as it is that he's probably just like, yeah, this is my wife.
But it happens over and over again. Let's do something we've never done before. And he's like, yeah, we've done this.
Yeah. And he just doesn't pick up on it.
And they go to the hotel. They try to check in. They can't get in the room. And then she's like, well, may I suggest that BJ's like, Allie, we can fuck him?
Yeah.
Because, A, she tries to blow him in the car, mm-hmm. and that doesn't work. Because she makes a comment about how his dick is different. And he's like, what? But then he dismisses it.
Yeah.
And then they can't check in the hotel room, so they go across the street to a strip club, where she decides she's going to be a stripper, tells him her name is BJ.
Yeah.
He says, why are you giving them your crazy sister's name? And she says, well, you always give a fake name. Like,
and he's like, use destiny. Like, yeah, it just doesn't even, like, click
with
it.
It's not click, and it's so blatantly obvious. Not just because we know, but because of the way she's acting.
Yeah.
And then
I did think it was funny that there was nobody in the strip club except for, like, 8 strippers, because, yes. as the woman behind the bar said, oh, they're all on lunch.
Yeah.
All at the same time. Yeah. They're on lunch.
And it gets crazy. They go back to the hotel. They still can't check into the hotel. So they get like some Catskills mud bath treatments or something. And BJ demands 2. And so then the hotel lady thinks this is going to be a threesome.
And she really tries to close up to Nate.
Yes, she does. And Nate's kind of refuting her. And it was just craziness.
And then, meanwhile, Robin gets found in the barn by the rednecks. And, you know, when they're about to – they're not even going to do anything to her. They're just like – they think that she's BJ. And they're like, we're going to stop you now. We're going to go collect the reward. And the man-child that is BJ's husband, like, dressed in a full straw ghillie suit, takes them all out. And then is like – he can't believe that – she's like, oh, no, BJ, I'm Robin. He goes, of course. What kind of man can't recognize his own wife? What kind of an idiot? And then he has to say that again later to
Nate. Yeah. Nate. Yeah. So Nate comes out of the mud bath, and the girl's trying to get him to... She does a handstand where she puts her ankles around his head, and she's doing a handstand. He's holding on to her, but he's completely naked, standing on this, like, slippery granite, and is completely covered in mud. And then she's like, all right, I'm going to do it again. But basically she goes, but this time, eat me out.
Yeah.
You know, get your face right down in there. Get that spot right between the holes, too. Like, I mean, it's very graphic. And he's like, no, I'm not going to do that. And then he slips and does a split and tears his taint.
And we get to hear him, like, as he's being wheeled around, we get to hear him talk about it ridiculously.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, oh, I'm oozing out of my taint. There's so much fluid that's coming out of my body. It was cringeworthy.
And she's trying to push him around on a luggage cart to get him away because BJ sees Robin.
Yep.
And then we have like a chase scene where BJ's trying to go through the kitchen like in a movie, action movie. And Robin and BJ's husband and the bounty hunter guys are all trying to like split up to cut him off. And then when they're going through the kitchen, the mud bath girl, she gets like scolding soup thrown all over her, and Nate just like toss her on the car. She's got to go to the hospital too. So BJ's pushing them both around.
She's got all kinds of blisters and sores. Their face is all red. Oh,
and she's still trying to have sex with Nate.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. She's still reaching out. Come on.
Yeah. And then finally they all meet up, and Nate doesn't believe Robin that she's Robin. And she's like, Nate, look at me. I'm your my favorite person. Like, ask me anything. When's your birthday? We're twins.
What's your father's name?
We have the same dad.
What's with these stupid questions?
And he's like, I don't know. And then finally, she just goes, Nate, look, and shows her ring. And he's like, oh, yeah.
So they're back together, and then we get the most awkward PS we have ever had.
Oh, where the son is talking to his dad. What do you mean you just tore your taint? And then he goes on about how, of all the stories his family's told, of all the ridiculous things that happened, this is the most ridiculous. All they could have said is, we're ditching with your grandmother, da-da-da-da-da.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
And then hangs up the phone, goes to step in the shower, and is confronted face-to-face with his naked sister.
Yeah.
And then stays there for way too long looking at her, and she's like, get out. And he's like, oh, my God, why were you in there? She's like, this is where I shower. And he's like, okay, what should I do now? And she's like, get out of the room.
Did you see how steamed up the room was? I thought it was Nana's cigarette smoke. But they both spent
the water
too much
was
time.
Running.
They both spent too much time looking at each other.
Yes. Yeah, it was really awkward. And then for him to be like, what do I do now? She's like, get out. Okay, yeah, that's right.
Well, and in previous episodes, because I don't want to break all those down, but like, some of the funniest moments were there in Nepal, I think it was, whatever, trying to get up to the top of the mountain to see where she was. Nate decides he's going to go out by himself, spends 8 hours climbing this mountain. And then right before taking the last step, he unhooks himself. And the monk is like, you shouldn't do that. And he's like, it's one step. I can make it. He slips and falls all the way back down the mountain. It's such a long, drawn out period of time as he falls down this mountain, flip. And then even when he gets to the gravel part of the mountain, there's he's still falling. And then when he lands by his campsite. And his wife sees him, oh, Nate, I'm glad you waited for us. And his face is all torn up. And he's bleeding.
I don't know about him.
They get back to the top of the mountain.
Like, the monk's like waiting.
It says like 8 hours later. He's like, my bag.
Yeah, it's me again. Remember me?
Oh, my bag. Yeah, it's right there. And there's another scene where Nate and Robin get arrested again. We're getting to a fight because Delilah's playing in this band. And they're at this concert that's for deaf people, and it's called Deaf Jam. And they thought they meant Deaf Jam, like D-E-F Jam, like Deaf Comedy Jam, like hip-hop music. But it was like everyone's deaf. And so Nate thinks he's getting into a fight, but everyone else thinks he's in the mosh pit, and he's kicking everyone's ass.
Hardcore. Because he's a hockey goon.
But they love it. It's the best mosh pit they've ever been in. But then they want to charge Robin with a hate crime because they were deaf people. And Delilah is, like, mortified at first. And then she's like, oh, this should be great. Great for my family. They haven't seen me in 7 months and blah, 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 blah. And then she watched them get arrested. But then her boyfriend, or soon-to-be ex-boyfriend now.
Yeah.
When she's like, you can't press charges on my dad. You can't. He's like, I'm gonna. She kicks the shit out of him.
Ever love a, like, bloody.
Like her dad does with gut punches and punched him in the face. Oh, yeah, because she re-broke his nose after her dad broke his nose. Mm-hmm. And then she, hey, officers, my ex-boyfriend wants to talk to you about something. So she's just like her dad.
Yep.
On the violent side. But yeah, it's a great show.
It is.
It's funny. I laugh the whole time I watch it. It's so inappropriate.
Yep.
But yeah. Did you watch The In-Between?
I did not.
Okay. All right. We'll hold off on that.
Yep.
There's four episodes now because they took like 2 weeks
like they
off.
Took a hiatus. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, it's like they aired the first two episodes, then they took 2 weeks off, and then now they've had two more since then. Okay. They're good.
Good. I still do like
really
the
show. Good. Oh, yeah.
I had forgotten about it because I don't have it set up to record on my DVR, so it's just on Hulu.
Yeah.
So I was sitting there, and I'm like, wait a minute. I haven't watched that in a while. I wonder if they have new episodes, and I was surprised they only had those new ones.
Yeah. They took 2 weeks off. But no, it's still really good.
Right.
Yeah.
Good. Cool. Good. I watched two new shows this week.
Oh, yeah?
It's an empty toilet paper roll. Gonna make a toy out of it? Oh. Oh, okay. So I watched two new shows this week.
Yeah.
The first one's called The Loudest Voice. It's on Showtime. It's an original, and I think it's a short-run show. It's very interesting.
Is it a fictional series?
No.
Okay.
No, it's not a documentary, but it's Russell Crowe is playing Roger Ailes. And it's from the moment that he was fired from MSNBC to the creation of Fox News Network.
Okay.
So it takes place back in that time period and watching his rise through the ranks, how he created this news network. Seth MacFarlane's in it. He's not playing himself. He's playing one of the people that was instrumental in this. Ally Sheedy's in it. Not Ally Sheedy. Elizabeth Shue is in it.
Oh, okay.
It's really good so far. Sometimes I like those shows that are like based on true events.
Yeah, absolutely.
And they're a dramatization of something that used to happen. There have been two episodes. I've only watched one of them, but I really liked it. Russell Crowe, I don't know if they put him in a fat suit or if they told him to gain like 100 pounds, but legitimately, you know, he's got to look like Roger Ailes, so he is really big. And I mean, he's just enormous. But yeah, it's on Showtime. And if you like that kind of stuff and you want to see the creation of, and it's definitely... so far, it seems a little left-leaning, but it's meant to tell the story.
Well, it's Fox News.
Right.
So, yeah, that makes sense.
And basically him saying, you know, every other news outlet out there is liberal. Let's go get get this base of people. So, yeah, I like it so far. And then I watched the first episode. I've been waiting for this one. It was on Stars, which I do the subscription to Stars through Amazon. The Rook. I'd seen a preview for it a while ago. And it's one of those shows. It starts off with this girl waking up in the rain on the street. And there's a bunch of bodies around her.
Mm-hmm.
She doesn't know who she is. She doesn't know where she is. She finds a piece of paper folded up in her pocket. It tells her where to go. She goes there. There's a video message from herself. And it basically gives you a Matrix thing. Her video version of herself says to her, you need to make a choice right now. I have set up contingency plans so that you can live a normal life away from this world, away from everything else. If you take the red pill, you basically forget about all this stuff and you can go live your normal life, blah, blah, blah. If you take the blue pill, and I think they're actually like keys, but yeah. If you take the blue one, then you can try to figure out who set me up and who's trying to kill me. And so she's getting these messages from herself saying, basically, I failed. I'm sorry that I put you in this position. You need to know somebody in the secret organization that you work for is trying to kill you. Then the twist of it is that everybody in this organization has psychic powers. So there's like this group of four people who are one person. It's four different people. But as she says, if you talk to one, you've talked to all four of them. So they share a hive mind, essentially. And then there's people who can use telekinesis, people who can read minds. It's interesting so far. So it's got like the Jason Bourne kind of thing going for it, where she doesn't know who she is. She's trying to piece it together through video messages and clues she's left herself, spycraft, and then psychic powers. I'm a fan.
Okay.
Yeah, it really grabbed me as soon as I started watching it. Ooh, she doesn't realize the extent of her powers, but like she gets pinned in a bank and these two people are coming at her and she just like, she tenses up and it was like a Jean Grey kind of moment. You know, and then she just, boom, blows them away.
Well, it sounds so interesting.
Yeah. And then I watched, you know, like the next few episodes of like Euphoria. Euphoria is actually getting better.
It's got renewed for a second season.
It's still a little creepy, but like Kat, the heavyset girl there, mm-hmm. who got, I told you how she got videotaped getting plowed from behind.
Yep.
She's actually embraced that, and she's going down the path of looking at online porn and how people really are into fetish stuff. She's got people who are paying her money to humiliate them, to show her feet, stuff like that. It's still very dark and twisted. I know that they're trying to say that the world is a lot darker for kids these days, but I feel like they're going a little too far. It's a little too stylized, a little too dark, but you know, whatever. And I will tell you, at work, I started rewatching Better Off Ted because I wanted something that I could just kind of put on that I've already seen and I can listen to and laugh. It's a great show.
Better Off Ted is a great show.
Yeah, and the nice thing is on Hulu, they've kept all the Viridian Dynamics commercials.
Really?
Because I was afraid that like, where you cut out the commercials, they wouldn't have those. But no, every one of them's there.
Nice.
I love them. I just watched the episode where the automatic light sensors were triggered by black people. So the company hired white people to walk around with the black people. That was their solution instead of fixing the system. It was so good.
Yeah, that is a good show. Actually, it might be something Kate might like.
It may be.
A half-hour comedy series that we can watch. Because we've been kind of watching, like, Tiny House Hunters on Hulu.
See, that could go two ways. One is the tiny house, and one could be, again, like I said, midgets.
Okay, now there's no midgets involved so far. Right. They're just...
And I know we talked about this on another one.
But, the one trigger I have for me is these people that go look at a tiny house and they go, it's so small. It's a tiny house.
Yeah.
Like this one woman who wants two bathrooms.
In a tiny house.
Like, it's just the absurdity of what some of these people want. But actually, I think one of the things that we both kind of like, it really shows you how the housing market works in different states and around the place. Because, like, they'll be in Seattle and they'll look at a tiny house that costs like $25,000.
Mm-hmm.
Literally that same exact tiny house, like over in somewhere in say, Southern California is like $125,000. You know, like and it's kind of weird how, and then we'll be over in like, they did an episode of Massachusetts, you know, and it's like in the middle of like, it's just weird. You look at like these tiny houses and depends on where you are, depends on how much they cost. And it really just shows how dramatically different pricing scenarios are right. or income levels are at different places, you know.
Because I'd imagine that it's the same for houses themselves. You know, I'd imagine that this is just allowing you to see a glimpse of that.
But like
a small slice?
Right. But it's kind of funny, like, you go to a place and, like, the tiny house isn't that expensive, but land is expensive there, or whatever it is. Like, this place in Colorado they were looking at, where, like, an acre of land costs, like, $90,000.
Damn!
You know, like, in this area they were at. Like, the tiny house they wanted was only, like, $35,000, or, you know, they're spending more on, like, a tiny house than I spent on my two-story house.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not like it has all these luxuries. It's just that's the housing market out there. Yeah. So I'd hate to see what, like, unquote-unquote normal house costs.
Personally, I couldn't do it for a couple of different reasons.
Yeah. You're tall.
One, I'm tall.
Yeah.
You know, I'm a big guy. And that just wouldn't work for me. Two,
right.
I need a little room to spread out. Like, I don't know about you, but there's times when I'm like, I don't want to be in this room anymore. I want to go to a different room.
Right.
You know, I don't want an entire house that is one room.
Well,
like this is where I shit and where I cook my dinner. Like, I can be pooping while I'm reaching over and cooking my mac and cheese. And,
like, a lot of times for us, like, our bedroom is huge. Our bedroom is 12 by 24.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, that's a really big room.
Yes.
And there's tiny houses that are smaller than our bedroom.
Mm-hmm.
And yes, they might have a loft or something. But, like, I'll think of that, too. This tiny house is, like, you know, 200 square feet. I'm like, my bedroom's bigger.
Yeah.
And my bedroom doesn't seem that big.
No. No,
but it's just
I get where some people would find an appeal in that, but that's also like saying there are some people who find an appeal in driving fish hooks into their nipples.
Right, that's true. It's like right now, like, there's a couple of tiny houses, quote unquote, that they showed that I'd be like, okay, when Kate and I are older and we don't have any kids, and it was just us, I could see living in something like that.
Really?
Yeah, because it's tiny, but. That's the other thing we've noticed, too, in a lot of these. It's the layouts, too. Sometimes they have a tiny house, but the layout inside is so shitty and not user-friendly that it's like it's – and then other times you see these amazing layouts where they have it done perfect and right. You know, like, there's this one particular one that we saw where basically there was a loft, but you didn't sleep in the loft. There was a bed at the end, and actually had it held a king-size bed. It had a built-in frame, so the storage was underneath it. It had a normal-sized toilet and sink and had a stand-up shower, had a full-size galley kitchen. And then it had a living area that actually had a propane fireplace that was used to heat the whole thing in the winter as well. And it had a spot to put, like, a couch and a chair and a TV. I mean, it was actually perfect. Like, and it wasn't huge by any means. But, I mean, it wasn't, like, the tiniest of tiny house, but it was, like, this is a very livable space that – two people could live in reasonably. But then it's like this other one we saw where these couple had three kids that they wanted to move into a tiny house. And the kids were young, so that's great now. But like in 5 years, when one of them's a teenager now, ain't going to fly.
Right.
You know, so, but.
Yeah. Yeah. How do tiny houses work for families when it comes to things like, I don't know, masturbation?
I'm not even going to say sex.
I'm going to say just plain old, like, knuckle shuffling.
I'm going to say not well.
Because, you know, the parents are going to be, at that point in your life, you're like, well, we'll find ways to do things. We'll get the kids out of the house. But a 15-year-old boy who's just, like, waking up in the middle of the night and he's like, I got to do something about this.
Yeah.
Everyone hears everything.
Yeah, they do.
Where do you put the rags after? Anyway.
Jesus.
This is a whole other kettle of fish.
That's not a road I want to go down.
No.
But we've been watching that.
It's coming. How old's your oldest?
Cannon's 13.
Yeah. It's coming.
I got time.
Barely. Okay.
I went to the movies.
Yes.
I went and saw Midsommar.
You'd sent me that message, and I wanted to properly convey my appreciation for the invite, coupled with my incredulous disbelief that I got an invite, because I remember not only our discussion about Hereditary, and the fact that we watched it together, and afterwards went, the hell?
Right.
And then, after a few days, and it had settled in, we had our podcast, and we went, the fuck was that?
Yeah.
And actually, like, me feeling the need to post on Facebook what a horrible, abysmal train wreck.
Yeah.
And then they're like, this is the next movie from the person who brought us Hereditary. And you're like, hey, we're going to go see it. I'm like, okay, first off, appreciate the invite.
Yeah.
Secondly, the fuck are you thinking?
Johnny wanted to go see it.
Yeah.
He really wanted to see it bad.
Did he like Hereditary?
I don't remember.
Oh, okay.
I don't think he disliked it.
Okay.
And there was just enough in the trailers that I was curious. And as he was like, oh, let's go do it. And I had to stay up late anyways for work. And I was like, oh, okay. All right. Yeah. Let's go.
Yep.
Whew.
Once bitten, twice bitten.
So this movie is better than Hereditary. The concept was very interesting.
Okay.
It's just...
No, go right ahead and spoil it if you want.
No, it's not about the spoiling. It's like, how do I describe it? Basically, there's a college student named... that he's from Sweden, and he's inviting his friends to go back with him to their festival that they do.
Okay.
And this festival is... Chidi's in it, by the way.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay.
So anyway, so they're going to this festival. It's in Sweden, where this guy's bringing these people back, and it's almost like, oh hey, we're gonna bring you back. All the young people go out, go to college, whatever, and then some of them bring back people to go to these ceremonies because they need people to be sacrificed. Yeah.
I'm sure they don't tell people.
No, they don't tell them that. So you have Danny is the main character, and her parents at the beginning, her sister, you know, people will sit in a car and put a hose in the windshield and carbon monoxide themselves?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, she kind of did that.
Okay.
She started up both vehicles. She taped hoses into the exhaust pipes, and then she ran those hoses into the house. And she put one in her parents' bedroom and taped the floor up so that it would stay in there. And then the other one she actually taped to her mouth so that when the police showed up, they found her parents dead and her sister had committed suicide and killed her parents.
How did she have the time and ability to do all of this, like taping up the floor, taping this to somebody's mouth? Like, how did the person not stop her?
So Danny's sister did this to her parents and herself while Danny was away at college.
Right. But I'm saying, like, how did she tape this into somebody's mouth without the person saying,
no. She taped it into her own mouth.
Oh, okay.
She just put the hose in her parents under her parents' door and then taped up around the door so it would stay in.
Okay,
there.
I thought you said she taped up the floor. And I'm like...
No, she did, like at the floor by the door.
Okay. She went around to plank of the floorboards.
No, she taped the floor at the base of the door so that it sealed up the room while her parents slept and then they breathed in the carbon monoxide and died.
Okay.
And then she taped the hose to her mouth. It's kind of weird.
Why? Was she afraid she might back out?
I don't know. Well, like, she sent her sister an email about being in a dark place, and she was going, and her parents were coming with her.
Yeah.
And her parents were coming with her. Goodbye. And then, of course, so anyways, you go to this community village in Sweden, and they have all these old-style ritual things. And, of course, everyone's like, well, we're just, you know, being open-minded and this and that. And it's just, you learn about, it's like a commune, and they have different living quarters where your age, 1 to 18, you live here. 18 to 36, you live here. Then 36 to, like, 72, you live here. Then when you turn 72, you die because you've lived your useful life.
Okay.
I mean, it's just weird and it's just odd, and there's some pretty good violence in it at different times, and it's just peculiar. And there's a very awkward sex scene in it where this one guy he's been drugged and he's now going to impregnate this girl to help mix the bloodlines, you know. And apparently, this director really likes to shoot people standing in a line naked. Like in Hereditary, remember?
Yeah.
And apparently in this commune, people, they share each other's emotions. So when you're emotionally devastated, then the people around you are supportive by also being emotionally devastated. And then when you're you know, sexually pleasured, the people around you also act like they're sexually pleasured. And it's just, yeah.
Okay. So
it's weird.
Have you officially learned your lesson now?
Yeah.
Like when the third movie comes out, they go, here's the next one from the director of Midsommar and Hereditary. I mean, you actually spent money to go to the theater to see this.
I know.
I feel bad for you.
I used a gift certificate.
Okay, I still feel bad for you.
Well, here's the thing that's kind of weird about it. It's like Hereditary was just terrible and not really interesting and kind of like whatever. This movie was kind of intense this movie wasn't confusing because they said, oh, this is our customs. This is what we do. And they explain it, actually.
Oh, so it wasn't just like, oh, and by the way, this may have to do with grandma, it may not.
Right. Like,
and it has something to do with dollhouses, but it doesn't really.
Correct. This wasn't confusing. Like, it's like he took his lesson from, I was too vague and confusing, Hereditary. So I'm going to make sure that everyone understands what's happening. So that was nice, at least. It was just, I sit here and go, why the fuck would anyone write this? Like, how is it like, oh, I got an idea. I'm going to do this. All right, yeah. And we're going to go to this village. And these people are going to, we're going to have this weird ceremony where they eat this big meal. And then afterwards, they're going to go stand on top of a cliff and they're going to throw themselves both off this cliff, right? Because they're sacrificing themselves. And then, because we have these old cultures. And then, I know what we're going to do. We're going to, like, stand in a circle, and then some old naked lady is going to push on the guy's butt while he's having sex with the girl to help make sure everything gets up in there. And then afterwards, we're going to put him in a – we're going to take a bear, and we're going to cut it open and take all his insides out, and then we're going to sew this guy up in the bear suit and then set him on fire. And, yeah, that's a great idea.
What?
Yeah. It was weird because it wasn't.
No, weird is not a word you can use here.
Let me phrase it. It was weird because it wasn't like one of those artsy French films or art film or like Hereditary was, where you just leaves you going, what am I watching? Like, I don't even understand what's happening. Like, and you need someone to translate what the person was trying to say. It's blatantly obvious what he's trying to say because the characters literally tell you what's happening and what they're doing. And yet it's weird in respect of like, What? How did he, like, he sat down and wrote this? And this was like, this is a great idea. Like, I don't know. I guess it's difficult to explain, but it's hard to explain. I didn't walk away going, like, what the fuck did I watch? I didn't understand it.
Yeah, which was the case with her.
I walked away going, what the fuck did I watch? I completely understand it, but still, what did I just watch? See, what, you know what I mean now?
Yeah.
Okay, that's the message I'm trying to convey with that. Okay. It's like I walked away confused, not because I didn't understand. I understood, just still confused.
Right. With Hereditary, it was like, wow, I think that was dog shit, but I don't even understand it well enough to know.
Yes.
In this case, you're like, oh, I get it. This is dog shit.
I understand why it is. But yet he thought this was a good idea.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah.
Huh. I assume you saw at least one other good movie at the theater this week, though.
I did, with you.
Yeah?
Yeah, but what were we talking about that last?
Probably, yeah.
Cool. All I have left really to talk about that I can think of is Star Trek Discovery and Stranger Things.
Well, since those are kind of spoilerish, because we're going to really deep dive into them, we can handle our trailers and news first if you want. Get that out of the way.
Yeah, I don't have a lot of that either.
Okay.
I got Rip Torn died.
Yeah.
He's only 7. He was 88.
Yeah.
He's looked 88 for 50 years.
Yes, he has. Yes. Saw the trailer. I saw it with you as well for Jumanji The Next Level.
Yes. That actually looked really good.
Honestly, like, the more time has passed, the more I say, people need to see the Jumanji reboot with The Rock and Jack Black. It was really good. And the sequel looks awesome because it's The Rock playing Danny DeVito.
Yep.
I mean, how cool is that?
Right.
Kevin Hart playing Danny Glover.
Yeah.
Knives Out.
Okay, so that trailer, that looks amazing.
It does look amazing.
What's it, Daniel Craig with a southern accent? Like, I didn't expect that.
detective.
Yeah, it's a murder mystery whodunit type thing. Uh-huh. In the South, and it looks great.
Most of it looks good, and then Chris Evans comes on the screen, and you're like, oh, this is why I want to watch this.
Oh my God, yes. His character, and watch the trailer. He is hilarious in the trailer.
And especially Fuck You.
And you have to watch the Red Band trailer, too.
Yes, definitely.
Because it's weird, like, it's Captain America, he's telling everyone to fuck off.
Yeah. Saw the trailer for the live-action Mulan. I did not expect to see that. It suddenly dropped out of nowhere. Much like The Lion King, it looks like it's going to be another almost shot-for-shot remake, but I don't know. It looks cool. Mulan was a good movie that kind of, you know, flew under the radar a little bit.
Yeah, I enjoyed Mulan.
Yeah. It doesn't have the cult following that, like, The Lion King or Aladdin did, or The Little Mermaid or Beauty and the Beast. You know, nobody really puts Mulan – well, I know at least one person who puts Mulan up on their top five list, but, you know, it's not one of those that it's the first to come to mind, but it looks good. And I saw trailer the other day for an independent movie called Ode to Joy, and I want to see this because it's Martin Freeman.
Yeah.
Okay. So Bilbo / John Watson. And he has a physical / mental condition where anytime he feels happy, he passes out. And so he could be right in the middle of walking down the street, and if he becomes overjoyed, he just collapses right then and there. Could get hit by a car. It's caused him a lot of pain in his life. So he tries to avoid happiness and excitement and joy.
Terrible way to live.
So he ends up marrying a very plain, boring woman in Melissa Roche, you know, Bernadette from Big Bang Theory. It's also got Shannon Woodard in it.
Oh, nice.
And the new woman that he kind of falls for, but he can't go for her because it would be too exciting, is Marina Baccarin. And so he gets his brother to go for her because he's like, I can't be around her, but she should be with somebody good, so go with her. But then he's like living vicariously, and she wants to be with him, and he knows that he can't because of his condition. It looks funny but touching. I want to check it out.
All I can think of is the guy in Big Bang Theory who gets a bloody nose every time he gets an erection.
Yep. That one, and I was thinking of that short period where JD, every time he stressed out, he passed out, like when he pooped.
Yes.
Yeah. Dr. Cox is like, if he poops, he's going to pass out. So that looks good. Netflix is going to be adapting Neil Gaiman's Sandman into a TV series.
Yep.
I'm kind of excited for that. This was a really weird one, and it kind of like just flew by, but I had to bring it up because it means something to you and I.
Yeah.
Apparently, Bond 25 is filming.
Yes.
They're having some difficulties with it. One of them, Rami Malek, this is kind of cool. He said he would be the villain as long as they didn't make him be a typical Middle Eastern terrorist, you know, Islam.
Right.
He didn't want it to be a stereotypical kind of thing. He said, I will be a villain, but I will be a regular villain, not, he's Egyptian, so he should be a Middle Eastern terrorist type of thing. But apparently they were going to have Grace Jones on the set.
Which is cool.
Yeah. And apparently she showed up on set for the first day, was there for about an hour or two, and then said, fuck you all, I quit, and left.
I wonder why that happened.
I don't know, but I'm kind of interested to find out now. Because it's not like she's doing anything else at this point.
Right. She was in Live and Let Die.
Yep.
Take a minute to remember which one she was in.
I don't know if you saw this, but we got our first looks at the characters from The Witcher, the Netflix adaption of the best-selling game. Looks good.
Yep.
Yeah. Everyone's commenting on Henry Cavill's butt. Because, you know, he's got a butt shot in it.
You get to see it? Oh, okay.
Comic-Con's coming up. Apparently we're going to finally get the Red Band trailer of the Jay and Silent Bob reboot.
Nice.
So, I'm interested.
I actually am looking forward to that because that's looking at the years of Kevin Smith I really enjoyed.
Yes. I've got, that piece of news I'm going to hold off on until after we do.
Oh, okay.
After we talk about our other stuff. This was very weird. So, there was a lot of news this week about Warner Brothers Media, Time Warner, AT&T.
Oh, yes. I read all that as well. Yeah.
So, they're coming out with a new, it's called HBO Max.
HBO Max, yep.
They're going to have a bunch of Warner Brothers stuff. They're going to have original things. They're taking back Friends.
Well, yeah, because Netflix commented they're losing Friends in January.
Yeah. And they're going to have some of their DC Universe stuff. But they said that the DC Universe will still exist. So they're going to have Doom Patrol on there. But
I had read that the DC Universe is going to be kind of merged into
I think that's HBO coming eventually. Max. But for the time, they're like, people are still paying. We don't want to, like,
Well, but HBO Max isn't even launching until next spring.
Mm-hmm.
So DC Universe, I think, will exist at least until then.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And then I think that you'll slowly see them, like, take it over.
Yeah.
But they've got some other promotional stuff. So in the midst of all that, they announced that they're going to be creating an original series, and it's going to be a prequel to Gremlins.
Really?
And it's going to be animated.
Okay.
The series will take place in Shanghai in the 1920s and tells the story of Mr. Wing as a 10-year-old meeting the young Mogwai Gizmo for the very first time. The duo was joined by a teenage street thief named L as they embark on a dangerous journey through China, coming into contact with various monsters and spirits from Chinese folklore. The ultimate goal is to return Gizmo to his family and find a long-lost treasure. There's too much in there.
Yeah.
That's way too much. Yeah. Mystical monsters from Chinese folklore, Mr. Wing the shopkeeper as a 10-year-old.
In 1920 Shanghai, China, and it's going to be animated.
Animated, and the ultimate goal is to get Gizmo back to his family. Guess what?
Does it happen?
Yeah. We've all seen Gremlins.
Yeah.
We know he didn't make it. So maybe it's going to be tragic as to why they didn't. I don't know. This goes on my official list of what the fuck are they thinking?
Okay.
The newest reboot coming out. Look Who's Talking.
I heard about that one like a couple weeks back too.
And I wasn't even going to mention it because fuck that.
Yeah.
But it was so predominant in my news feed that I was like, all right, I just need to go on record as saying, fuck that. They're like, oh, the CGI is better nowadays, so they can really look like the babies are talking. Don't want them to.
Babies didn't look like they were talking in the first movie.
They were thinking it.
Thoughts, yeah, because they're babies.
And again, in the corner of what the fuck news, the director of the new Joker movie came out and said, oh, this won't follow any of the comics.
Yes.
At all.
This is not canon in any way, shape, or form.
Yeah, it'll have nothing to do with the comics.
Yeah.
He might as well have just done this interview with giant middle fingers flipping everybody off. I mean, we already didn't want this. We already don't need this. And now he's like, oh, it's going to be the Joker, but nothing to do with the comics.
Yeah, it's actually just going to be a guy who we're going to call the Joker.
Yeah.
And
he's sad and has a tragic life, so he becomes a mean clown. Okay, so call him Mean Clown.
Right.
Oh, man, I read that, and I was like, are you fucking kidding me? Nothing to do with the comics.
Yeah.
Couldn't be bothered, I guess. The only other news that I had, which was interesting to me, they are coming out with a new Mortal Kombat movie.
Yeah, I've seen some stuff about that.
And they just announced that it's going to be rated R, and it will feature fatalities.
Nice.
I'm on board for that.
Nice.
Because that was the biggest problem with the other Mortal Kombat movies was, you know, people might have died, but it was like lame dying. Yes. Mortal Kombat's about disemboweling people or ripping them apart or feeding them their own beating heart. So I'm excited about that.
I think it definitely needs fatalities. I agree with that 100%.
So that being said,
hold on though. You didn't bring up the trailer for Another Life.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah, the one with Katie Sackhoff. Now, I watched the trailer, and honestly, there's nothing about the trailer that makes me go, "Man, this looks fantastic."
Not at all.
But it's Katie Sackhoff, and in it's space. The space, and so I'm going to watch it.
Yeah, I'll at least check it out.
Yeah,
yeah, I felt the same way. I watched the trailer, and I'm like, I don't care.
Yeah, it comes out in a couple weeks. But yeah, so anyways, one thing I did, if you look at the HBO Max, going back to that real quick.
Yeah.
They didn't say what the price point was going to be on it.
Correct.
Which I'm curious about because, it's supposed to have HBO. Mm-hmm. It's going to have Cinemax.
Oh, and it's taking all the CW originals. So
yes.
Everything's coming off Netflix. So Supergirl, Arrow, Flash, those are all coming away and going to this.
Yeah, all the CW stuff. And that's why I said also all the DC Universe stuff. And then it showed, like, all the Warner properties that they own, like TNT, TBS. I think you're going to see all those apps going away because it's all going to merge into this one app.
Mm-hmm.
And to me, I'm looking – because, like, if you look at the very last thing they show, one of the last scenes you show in the trailer, it's got all the icons for all the channels, mm-hmm. you know? And it's like HBO is $14.99 a month for HBO Now.
Yep.
How are they going to have HBO, Cinemax, and all this other content and charge less than that?
I don't know.
So the price point, I think, is going to be scary.
I think you're right. you know, you've got Disney Plus coming out a little bit before that at what, like $6 a month?
Disney Plus, I think, yeah, is like $6 or $7.
Yeah, because they're going cheap.
Yeah.
And then you've got Netflix and Hulu that already exist at their own price points. You know, you pay for whatever you want. Netflix is, it's going to be interesting. They're already losing The Office to NBC, which is huge. That is a huge show for them.
Is NBC starting their own app?
Yes, NBC okay. Universal.
All right.
And then you've got, now Friends is going to be leaving.
Yeah.
I mean, those are two tentpole shows, which somebody from the outside might go, oh, but they're old shows. But they draw people in constantly.
Yeah, Netflix the other day mentioned like how they're going to be curbing their spending, and they're not going to spend as much, and da-da-da-da-da, and blah-blah-blah. And then, like, I don't know, 2 days later announced, like, they cut all these deals, all these top Hollywood
yeah.
actors and actresses to have movie to have to get their movies on Netflix.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like the one with The Rock and Gal Gadot, and yes. they added Ryan Reynolds to it.
Yes.
But, so they're losing The Office. They're losing Friends. They're losing all the CW shows.
Yeah.
They're losing, well, I just had it on the tip of my tongue. There's something else that's going away. Oh, all of the Marvel stuff. You know, yeah. they lost all the Marvel TV shows. Yes. Now they're losing all the Marvel movies because yeah. those are all going to go over to Disney Plus.
Yeah.
So Netflix really has to re-strategize. They do some good stuff with, like, you know, Stranger Things.
They do have some good stuff. A lot of their international stuff is decent, but, like, a lot of people, the majority of the people, don't want to watch foreign stuff in another right. language.
Right.
So they're going to watch it English dubbed, and then if the English dubbing looks like shit, they're not going to watch it.
Mm-hmm. That's true. And other than that, they've got stand-up specials. They've got some of their original series and movies. And pretty much they're not going to have anybody else's stuff.
Yeah, Netflix is almost getting to the point. It's not there right now.
Mm-hmm.
But I feel like it's getting to the point where it's only going to be like, for instance, I got a month of CBS All Access to watch Twilight Zone and Star Trek Discovery.
Yep.
That month expires July 26th, by the way, mm-hmm. and I'm canceling it.
Mm-hmm.
I don't have a reason to watch to get another month. I mean, I spent $10. That's enough.
Except you will have a reason to get another month because of Picard. Because you've seen the poster, I'm assuming.
Yes, I know. But
the dog.
I'm just
there's a dog.
I'm just going to wait.
Yeah. Right, right. You're not going to stay subscribed
right.
and pay them every month to sit there.
No. Well, like, for this $10 was worth it to me because I watched two seasons of Discovery
mm-hmm.
plus The Twilight Zone.
Mm-hmm.
I gave you my login information. You watched both seasons of Discovery. And are you going to watch Twilight Zone?
Yeah, I watched that Terror at 30,000 Feet.
Okay, that was a good one.
Yep. And yeah. then I'll watch the rest of them.
I mean, the Terror 30, just real quick, that was a very different take on it.
It was a very different take. I liked it. Yeah, it was. It's funny. It was a different take, but at the same time, it was wholly predictable.
Yeah.
Like, you knew the. He was going to be listening to it. And it was going to be playing out exactly what was happening, and that he was going to. It was a self-fulfilling prophecy, yes. essentially.
Yes.
So, but it was still interesting the way that it played out. Like listening to the very tail end of it, and they're like, "Everyone was rescued except him."
Yeah.
And then they're all like closing in on him, and he's like, "I was trying to save us." That's late plans, buddy.
Yep, yep. They kind of do that. Like, there's an episode called Wonder Kid in this.
The one that you really didn't want to watch.
I did watch it, and eventually, and it's my least favorite episode of the season. But it's spoofs. It's a take. It's of their version on. I can't remember the name of the episode, but it was in the Twilight Zone, the original series, and then when they did the Twilight Zone the movie, they included that in it as well. And it's about like this kid who has magic powers, so everyone's got to be nice and good around him, and he can.
Oh, I hated that episode.
Puts them in the field, or like the guy made the Jack in the Box, but you just see the shadow because it's the Twilight Zone, and
takes away his sister's mouth or somebody's mouth.
Yeah, basically, he's just this shithead kid who has powers, and that's kind of what Wonder Kid's about. It's a take on that. So it's my least favorite episode.
Yeah.
But don't watch it at work because there's a lot of F-bombs in it.
Okay.
Just to give you a heads up.
Gotcha.
In case you're like, I'll just put it on now and get through it so I can while I'm working. Yeah, no. There's a lot of swearing in it.
I always listen through my earbuds anyway.
Okay.
So,
all right. Yeah. Discovery? Or do you have something else you want to talk about?
No. I was going to say, fair warning for everybody. From this point on, it will be all heavy spoiler stuff. We're going to talk both existing seasons of Discovery in depth.
Yep.
We're going to talk season three, not season three. We're going to talk Stranger Things 3, all 8 episodes. So the entire thing. And we're going to top it off with talking about Spider-Man Far From Home, which is still in theaters. So any of that sounds like you don't want to be part of it, you should take off now.
Yeah.
Otherwise, You want to start with Discovery?
Oh, I do want to start with Discovery.
Okay.
So to me, Star Trek Discovery is a tale of two different shows between season one and season two.
Absolutely.
So I'm watching season one. So just in a nutshell.
There's 15 episodes in season one. There's 14 in season two.
Season one is actually two parts. They break it down to two chapters. The first nine episodes are chapter one, and then the next six episodes are chapter two.
Yep. And my God, I really thought they had too many episodes in this season.
I did.
Like, I was watching this and going, are they going to be done yet?
So for me, season one is not Star Trek.
Nope.
Not at all.
No.
No way, shape, or form is it Star Trek.
The first four episodes to me felt like a movie.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. It was just spread out because it was all the setup of the Klingon War. And creating the Klingon War and creating why they're going to war with the Klingons and creating the reason that Michael, which I got used to it eventually, but it still bothered me that her name was Michael.
Yeah.
I've never seen
the main character Michael. Was a female named Michael Burnham. Well, yeah. Michael Leonard.
Who?
Michael Leonard. She was the mom on the Waltons and she was in Scrubs. I can't think of her name, but you know who I'm talking about. She was the old lady
who died
because, the loser intern guy coughed on his hand. Cabbage got the green on his hand and shook her hand and she got green on and then she touched her face.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
So her name is Michael.
Her name is Michael.
Interesting. Okay. Yeah. Then I do know Michael.
There you go. Besides me, I mean.
Right.
But a woman.
Right.
Besides you. Michael Burnham is the first officer on Discovery. Her captain is, it's Michelle Yeoh.
Yeah.
It's Philippa Georgiou. Excuse me. So in the first episode, so let's just real quick. Season one to me is not Star Trek at all.
Nope.
Season two is Star Trek.
Yes.
That's how I kind of look at that.
Season one, the second half of it started getting more Star Trek-y.
Yes.
Because of the mirror.
Yes.
We'll just say that.
Season two was just straight up Star Trek.
Yeah.
They explored.
Season two was 75% 60% Star Trek, 40% Doctor Who.
Okay, yes. Let's go with that. That's fine, too. But it was more Star Trek than season one was Star Trek.
Yeah.
So basically, I mean, I guess we don't need to go deep dive. I mean, it's been almost 2 years since Discovery first started. The first episode came out September 24, 2017.
Okay.
So we have Michael Burnham. She's the first officer on the Discovery. And they meet up with... Shenzhou.
Yeah.
The Shenzhou, sorry. And they meet up with the Klingon... The long and the short of it's this. She feels the only way for them to...
Nobody's seen Klingons in a while. They've kind of kept to their space, and the Federation has kept to their space, and everybody's been, like, on edge, but there's been no open hostilities. It's just like the Klingons are the boogeyman out there, but we don't touch them. And now they're in...
There's a signal that they're on this ship that's in Federation space on the borders with the Klingons. Michael boards the ship. They're checking it out. A Klingon appears. They fight. She accidentally kills him.
Mm-hmm.
So now she's essentially started the war with the Klingons. So all these Klingon ships start showing up because there's this one Klingon guy who's trying to unite the 24 Klingon houses into one Klingon empire.
Yep.
And Michael talks to her, basically, as we find out, adopted father.
Yeah.
Who is Spock's dad as well,
which
Vulcan
really felt shoehorned in.
Yeah, I mean, I agree.
Sarek, like that really kind of bugged me because we always had good stories of Spock and his dad, whether they didn't see eye to eye or not. It was always kind of a thing, even to the point where, it was center stage in the reboot of the movies when Spock loses his mother and only has his dad around. You know, It's always been a key thing, and now they're like, oh, well, let's just reuse this Vulcan guy and say that Spock had a sister.
Right.
Adopted.
So there's a lot of things that happen in the show that make me go, what the fuck? Because that's not happening. Because if you look at the timelines, this runs almost concurrent with the original series, timeline-wise, you know, the years it takes place. So it's like, for instance, Spock... being this, like Michael Burnham being Spock's half sister, why have we never heard of her before?
Right.
So I'm messaging my buddy Brandon, who's already watched it. What the fuck, dude? Why? And he's like, just watch it. He doesn't want to spoil anything for me, and I get it. And eventually, he does kind of explain it.
in a shitty way, in my opinion.
Oh, it's, we'll it's, yeah. But anyways, so she talks to her adopted dad, and basically she's like, how did the Klingons and the Vulcans come to an impasse? And he's like, oh, we struck first.
Yeah.
Every time we saw them, we struck first. Finally, they sat down and talked to us.
Yeah.
So Burnham's thought is like, that's what we have to do. We have to attack them. We have to strike first.
Now, correct me if I'm wrong. Right in the beginning there, one of the things that throws them off is that they didn't know that cloaking technology exists. And
correct.
The Klingons all have it.
No. Only this one Klingon. Oh, that's right. Only this one... this disgraced house full of Klingons that it's essentially, and it's like Klingons that are white or light skinned.
Yeah. Translucent skin.
Yeah. And Klingons that don't have any parents, so they don't have a house that they can call their own.
And then whenever one of them dies, they put them in a coffin and strap the coffin to the ship.
Yeah.
They call it, it's not a coffin ship, but they call it something like that.
It's like a, it's like a mausoleum ship.
Though. Yeah. Yeah.
But this one
and they
guy,
use that as like their armor.
This yes. And this one guy that kind of runs it, he calls him the torchbearer.
Yep.
Because they're supposed to light the way with this ship to let all the Klingons know to come here.
Because their god that they all pray right. to is the god of light.
Yeah.
You know, the light of... Ugh.
But he's developed a cloaking technology that yep. no other Klingons have and no one else has.
And he basically wants to show it off to the other Klingons and be like, hey...
Yeah.
Look what I can do.
And also, this Klingon is using the I come in peace.
Yeah.
Volk. He's using the I come in peace as a way to say, no, they're not coming in peace. They're coming in war. They're just trying to pretend they're coming in peace. So he hates the Federation on principle. So when the Federation accidentally kills one of his men, it just gives him all he needs to light the torch, bring all the 24 houses there, and say, see, this is what they're trying to do. This is what they want. They want war with us.
Yep.
Michael decides that she needs that we need to strike first because that's what the Vulcans did, and her captain disagrees with her. So Michael just basically commits mutiny.
Yeah, well, her captain like vehemently disagrees, and then actually confines her to quarters. Says, "Get off my deck."
Yeah,
no, you're not fit to be up here. I don't want you around. We will not be striking first because the Federation doesn't strike first.
Right.
We don't pick fights.
So she will know. They go into the captain's quarters to talk.
Yep.
And she does the Vulcan nerve pinch on her and then goes out and orders them to attack the shuttle as the first officer. And Saru's like, oh, are we supposed to be doing that? And she's like, can it, Saru? And then Philippa comes out and basically charges the mutiny and puts her in the brig.
Yep.
And once she gets in the brig, then the Klingons attack the Federation.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
And... they are, the Federation is very outgunned.
Yes.
Very, very outgunned. So, had they struck first, they might have stood a chance.
Yep, but they didn't.
Nope.
Now the war started. And yep. now the rest of this season, and the majority of the next season, is all centered around the Great Klingon War.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's what, in the second episode, it's the Battle of the Binary Stars, or Binary Stars, whatever. Burnham and the captain, because she, you know, you got to work with who you got. So Burnham and the captain end up going over onto the torch ship, the Klingon ship, because they need to get stuff off it to get their own ship to run again.
Mm-hmm.
And in the process, the captain's killed.
Yep.
But they also kill T'Kuvma? Yeah, I think that's how you say it.
Yeah. The one
Klingon torchbearer, yes. And then Volk becomes his successor, and he's the Klingon we have to deal with for the next couple seasons.
Right.
The rest of this season.
Kind of,
yeah. Yeah.
That whole... So, I'll just put this out there as a blanket statement, yeah. But simultaneously, this show did some really good things and did some really dumb things. Like, it turned out every time you turned around, there somebody else was either a double agent or a triple agent or...
Yeah.
Quadruple agent?
No, that's stupid. Why would anybody be a quadruple agent? What is wrong with you?
If they're a quadruple agent, then they're the agent through themselves. They're just everyone thinks that they're going down. That doesn't make any sense.
Quadruple agent. Where'd you come up with her?
Triple agent?
No, because like, okay, so you're all right. I think you're working for me,
yeah.
And he thinks you're working, and then he thinks you're working for her. Wait, I think you're working for me,
yes.
But you're really secretly working for John,
yeah.
And John knows that you work for me, but you're secretly working for him. And he's like, ho 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 ho. But in reality, you're working for me, secretly working for John, who thinks that, but you're actually working for me.
Why couldn't there be a fourth
Because then you're just working for John again.
Right. At that point, you're just like...
Well, then you're just... No, because... No, that's not... No.
No, because then that's just split loyalty.
Okay. Okay. All right.
I expect a spec script within 2 weeks.
Okay, I'll get right on.
Make it work.
Make it happen. So, yeah, everybody is betraying everybody else, right. And you never know who's actually really who they are and who isn't. And
well, but they...
Sounds like real life.
Kind of, yeah.
Everyone's being fake.
Yeah.
So, at the end of the second episode, though, Burnham is sentenced to life in prison for yep. mutiny. And then episode 3 takes place 6 months later, and we're 6 months deep into the Klingon War, and she is being transferred on a ship and doesn't know why. And the ship comes... Okay, so this is kind of my favorite part. Something happens with the ship, and the pilot's got to go out to work on something, and then something happens, and just in the background through the windscreen, you see the pilot just floating away into space. And it's like, oh no, we're screwed. And Michael's like, yeah, we are. And the other three prisoners are like, we got to do something. She's like, man, whatever.
Yeah. Well, she's already staring down life in prison.
Right.
She doesn't really care.
And then they get rescued by Discovery. And we finally see Discovery for the first time.
Yeah. The namesake of the entire show.
Right. In the third episode.
Yeah.
And we meet the captain. And the captain, as we come to find out later, essentially got her to get transferred.
Mm-hmm.
And then got her on his ship because he wanted all the best people. That's what he leads us to believe. He wants all the best people to get done what he needs to get done.
Yeah, he basically has the island of misfit toys here.
Yes.
In effect, because he's gathering up all these people who don't have a home, who don't have a ship of their own, who would do a really good job for him, but nobody else wants them.
And Discovery's supposed to be a science vessel.
Yeah.
But he's like, but we're in war, and I have the greatest... And then they introduce something called the Spore Drive, which I'm just like, wait.
Yeah.
Because it's a jump drive is what it is. They just call it the Spore Drive, but it runs on mushrooms, and they can figure out...
The Mycenaeal Network.
Spore.
No, spore. Like
mushroom spores.
Is this a cartoon, and there's like little squirrels and rabbits driving these vehicles?
No, this is Star Trek. It's a spaceship. It runs on, and it has a spore drive that runs on mushrooms.
Yeah. Mycenaeal mushrooms.
Quadruple, whatever. It was stupid.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You guys are such losers.
Thanks, honey. So, anyhow.
Yeah. I like you.
Oh, good. Good.
She begrudgingly added the both.
I saw that.
I didn't want Michael to feel left out.
Oh. Burn from the wifer.
So the spore drive gets introduced where basically they just jump. Because it's all... And it's essentially remember the same thing. The spore drive has to hook to a person. Called Stamets.
Well, no. Not at first.
Well, not at first, but
at first they can't get it to work.
Right. They can't get to work at all.
They know the technology is there, and it's basically folding reality and jumping from one... Like, it doesn't warp. It just... You're in one spot, and then you're in another spot.
Right.
In the entire universe. But
jumps.
They can't get it to work.
Right. There's another ship that's working on the same type of technology, and they experience a catastrophic failure.
Yep.
And
so they're like, hey, let's go over there and take their tech.
Right. So they go over there and check it out, and they find this giant creature.
Yeah.
That essentially it runs on.
It looks like...
It's Battlestar Galactica, where the humanoid in the tub goes, jump!
Yeah. It was... The whole first season, to me, did feel a lot like a weak Battlestar Galactica.
Yes, yes.
Because it was very political. It was... It had the jump drive, and it had a lot of characters that you were like, why do I care about these characters?
But I really feel like the writers sat down and wrote 2 seasons of this show for it to make sense.
Mm-hmm.
Because otherwise it doesn't. Because unless what happens at the end of season 2 happens, then it's just like, why doesn't the spore drive exist in this universe? And that's one of the things I mentioned to Brandon. I go, all right, dude, I can let a lot of things go. I can overlook a lot of things. You know, like, for instance, they're teleporting. Like, in all the original Star Trek series, you have to at least go to the teleporter to be teleported from someplace. To someplace, or they can grab you off someplace to the teleporter, but the teleporter has to be involved in some way. Whereas in this show, they do a thing where they can be teleported from the engine room to sick bay.
Yeah.
Well, that shouldn't happen.
No, it shouldn't.
But I'm going to overlook it. Because for the communicators, they're using the handheld comms. It's the old school way looking ones like that in the original Star Trek series. Same thing with the phasers. Like, you know, that stuff kind of looks the same.
Mm-hmm.
In the second season, we do get introduced to the badge communicator because, like, Section 31
mm-hmm.
had the badge communicators where they touch their badge to communicate because we get Captain Pike in the second season. Mm-hmm. And Captain Pike's like, what kind of communicator is that? You know, but then I guess we don't see that again to the Next Generation. So, like, there's a lot of things. The little things I could let go. But the spore drive, I couldn't. I'm like, dude, why? This is ridiculous. We would see this technology all over the Federation if it existed.
And that's how they were talking about it, too, is they basically said, you know, this is the new technology. We're working on it, and we're going to roll it out to everybody.
Yeah.
Like, this is going to be what wins us the war because, you know, instead of warping, we can be anywhere we need to be. Right. Any ship can be anywhere in the universe at any time at a moment's notice.
And Brandon's like, it'll make sense. You just have to watch both seasons. It'll make sense. I'm like, okay.
So basically they go to this derelict ship or this destroyed ship. They find essentially a ginormous water bear.
Yes.
Which is, the water bears are microscopic organisms that live in our houses and our dust and everything, and they love
probably
water.
On us, yeah.
Yeah. And it's this giant water bear that is ripping the shit apart on the ship, ripping people apart. You know, they're like, ooh. So what do? They capture it.
Yeah, because Lorca wants to, he's the captain, he wants to weaponize it.
Yeah.
Michael's the one that realizes, no, he's not, he's somehow connected to the spores, he's somehow connected to the network, and he's not a aggressive creature, he's defending himself.
Right.
Is what it comes down to.
And he doesn't like light.
So then we get an episode called Choose Your Pain, where the captain is kidnapped by some Klingons. And he meets up with, what's his face? Ash Tyler and Harry Mudd, who is annoying.
Yes.
He meets up.
Although, I have to say, of all the characters, I wanted to see more of him after the next episode that we saw him in.
Yes.
Played by Rainn Wilson.
Yes.
Who, I love Rainn Wilson as it is.
So basically he meets this character named Ash Tyler, and him and the captain getting some shit together, and then they come out of it, and he's like, Ash, I want you on my ship. And he's like, okay, I'll do it. And now he works for them.
Yeah.
And he's the head of security now. And essentially, as the story's progressing, it's all about trying to get the spore drive to work. And then eventually, the spore drive does work because Paul Stamets is the character who's like the head scientist guy who's discovered these spores, who's working with them. Who, by the way, I love this character.
I hated him at first. I was like, he's just a dick scientist and he's going to be one of those guys who's just like an asshole and blah, blah, blah. He really became one of my favorites.
I agree with you. He was an asshole at first, but as the show progressed, especially through the second season, he really became one of my favorite characters.
Because honestly, Discovery has done one thing tremendously right, and that is character development.
Oh, they've done some tremendous
characters. Characters became so amazing that I loved watching them grow. I love watching them change. Saru, holy shit.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Anyway, so what has he discovered? He said he got it to work.
He got it to work by hooking himself into it.
Nope. Nope, he hooked the water bear into it.
Oh, yes. They hooked the water... Okay, I thought we were past that. I apologize. Nope. They hooked the water bear into it, and the water... They could
because
get
he
work.
Was reacting to the mushrooms.
Right.
And they were like, oh, wait a minute. When we try to start this up, he lights up.
Yeah.
So they hooked him into it, and holy shit, it worked. They could actually plot courses. Although, they were off by a little bit at first, but they also discovered that by doing this, they were draining him.
Yes.
And they were weakening him, and he wouldn't survive many of those.
Right.
But one thing that they do a lot in this show is, we don't care, we need to push this.
Yes, that's a big thing. And so Lorca's like, so the water bear dehydrates himself.
Yep.
And curls up into this little dried up ball.
Yeah, little husk.
And the captain's basically like, hydrate him, hook him up, we need to do this.
Yep.
And Burnham has talked to Stamets about it, and Stamets has agreed that, no, we can't do that. He will kill them because he's not an aggressive creature. He's a living being, and through the Federation's moral guidelines, they can't do stuff without permission. They can't just do these, as opposed to the captain's like, I don't care, we're going to do it.
Right.
And this one whole thing going through the whole series is Captain has this problem with his eyes that he got injured during this battle and it damaged his retinas and he can't see bright things, but instead of fixing it, he just puts drops in it.
Yeah.
This is huge.
He's similar to the water bear there, where
yes.
Essentially they're both photosensitive.
Right. So Stamets hooks himself into the machine
yep.
to do the jump.
Painfully.
Yes.
It's giant needles that yeah, stab
him. And they think it's going to kill him.
Yep.
And it doesn't.
But he does it because he's been exposed to the mushrooms for the longest.
Yes.
He's been using them, working with them. So he feels that, you know, he is a biologic. And he can help guide them there.
Because of his intelligence.
Yep.
And then his boyfriend, who's the doctor on the ship, develops a way where he can just have the things inserted into his arms. So now yep. he has these mechanisms put in his arms, and he can have these needles inserted in him, yep. and he can become... He can guide the ship that
way. He is the navigator.
But it also takes its toll on him.
Mm-hmm.
In the interim, they take the water bear and shuttle him into space.
To save him.
To save his life.
They let him yep. go out there and live among the
yeah.
mycelium.
Because even just the spores themselves can't bring him back. So as soon as they shuttle him in space, he becomes alive and
yep.
disappears and jumps himself or whatever.
Yep.
So now Paul can jump the ship. So Lorca's happy about that.
Right.
And... Yeah.
Now it's time to start fighting back against the Klingons, like
yes.
the Klingons that are taking on that mining colony. Let's jump in there and shoot them up.
Yeah.
You know, except that they jump in and shoot the first two and then weren't ready for the other, like, seven or eight that are there.
Right.
So
the captain develops this plan where they're going to do 133 micro jumps. And by doing, which is a lot...
This is a little further on, but yes,
yeah.
they basically have to...
I'm jumping way ahead.
Yeah.
We got a lot to talk about.
Yeah.
And I don't... Yeah.
Yeah, we don't need to get bogged down in all the minutia.
So they have to do this 133 micro jumps, and by doing this...
they're trying to see through the cloak.
Yes.
Is essentially what it is. They put an away team on there to drop two beacons, and
yeah.
then they basically need to take pictures from all these different angles simultaneously to narrow down
yes.
what it looks like behind the cloak.
So when they're doing these micro jumps, we got Burnham and Ash Tyler on the ship, an admiral, admirable. Well, I guess a couple episodes back, that this admiral found out that Lorca had some mental health issues.
Yep.
And
she's still sleeping with him.
Well, this was after she slept with him.
Right.
He's not fit to be captain. He needs to be removed from the ship and this and that. And so Lorca doesn't want that to happen. Then, of course, this scenario happens where they need someone to go meet with the Klingons. And they send the admiral and Sirk, Spock's dad's place.
Sarek,
thank you. Of course, the admiral gets kidnapped because it's all a ploy.
Right.
So when Burnham and Ash Tyler go to the ship and they find the admiral, they rescue her. Ash sees, what's her name, Laurel?
Yeah.
A Klingon woman. And who's a leader. And he starts having horrendous PTSD shock symptoms because this was her, when he was captured by these Klingons for all those months, that was his torturer.
Yep.
She's the one that was torturing him. And we see all these horrible medical things that she was doing to him and torturing him. And... So he goes to this PTSD shock, so Michael, of course, has got to do it herself, and then she succeeds, and all these 133 jumps happen, and then they save because they have to save this planet, because this is where they get all their fuel, basically.
Yep.
This is one of the two places where they mine all the fuel they need for the starships. So they save the planet, they destroy the Klingons, but then something happens, and they do one more jump to get out of there, because now they got to go back to, you know... Starbase One, yeah. And during the jump, something happens, and they jump out into an alternate universe.
The Mirror Universe.
And that's kind of how Chapter 1 ends.
Yep.
Chapter 2 takes place, and this is also when they did the series, they took a hiatus
mm-hmm.
for like 2 months.
Boy, I tell you, I would have had a hard time coming back.
Because
up until that point, I was not really impressed.
Yeah, I mean, I was impressed enough that... I kept watching because
you also had it right there.
That's what I mean, because it was right there. So I started the next episode straight away, but if I had a 2 month hiatus, you're right. If this was on regular TV, it would probably have been a struggle to go back to.
Or if you had been subscribing regularly to that point, you probably
would have
been like, I'm going to cancel and I don't care what they do.
Yeah. So they come back after the hiatus, and now we're in the parallel mirror universe, and Stamets is just gone from these 133 microjumps he did.
Yeah.
His character's basically, his brain's kind of fried. He's almost kind of...
Yep.
What's the state he's in?
Catatonic?
Yeah. Basically, yeah.
Did we have the... wasn't the Groundhog Day episode before all this? With Mud?
No, that was season two.
Oh, okay. Was that?
That was season two.
Love that episode.
That was a great episode.
Yeah.
Because we like those type of things. So the second half of the season, we're in the mirror universe, so we're seeing a lot of the characters that we'd seen before. It's instead of the USS, it's the ISS. Like, the ISS Shinzu is still around.
Basically, the Terrans.
Yes.
The humans.
They're the Terrans.
The Terran Empire has this faceless emperor who they all report to, and they have conquered the galaxy, the universe, what have you.
Yeah.
Everybody else... The Vulcans, the Romulans, the Klingons.
They all work together against the Terrans.
Yeah, and they lose.
Yeah.
Like, they are all on the run. They're considered rebels. The Terrans go out and hunt them for sport.
Yep.
Now, at one point, one of the ships like, oh, hey, you're going to let me have all the fun? All right, well, I'm going to go kill a bunch of rebels before you do.
So when Chapter 2 starts, I'm messaging Brandon. I'm like, this is fucking Star Wars now. Because we have the rebels fighting against the evil Empire and the faceless Emperor.
Uh-huh.
It's Star Wars.
Yeah.
And I'm still, you know, like... And the other thing, too, is, like... And I really noticed this, I guess, with the second season more than the first season. And the first season, they don't do a lot of character development. They do, but they don't. They do on their main characters, like Paul Stamets, Lorca, Burnham, Saru, Tilly. Excuse me. And then a few other characters, Ash, when he shows Ash Tyler. But otherwise, it's not real. The rest of the crew is just kind of there.
Yep.
And the second season, they really develop the crew a lot in the second season. And there's more comedy. And it's weird. It's like the second season had a different showrunner, too. Because there's a more of a lighter comedic element that's now being introduced into the show.
Mm-hmm.
You know, especially with, like, the two girls that run the helm, if you will. Like, they are constantly, like, making eyes at each other. Like, oh, my gosh, or...
Although I really had a, and we'll get to it, I'm sure, but the episode with the android, the cyborg, I guess.
Cyborg, yeah.
Really kind of bothered me how this is a character who has just been in the background
the whole time. Yeah.
And then all of a sudden we're supposed to care about her.
Right.
Anyway.
So this whole second half here of the season essentially is because, what was the movie, First Contact?
Yes.
So that movie ties in with the second half of the season. So they're trying to find that ship to find out how it survived the jump to the mirror universe.
Right.
And we find out when we meet the Emperor, who is Michelle Yeoh's character, Philippa Georgiou, whatever.
Yep.
We find out in this universe that Michael Burnham is her adopted daughter.
Yep.
Yeah. And, of course, she's telling her, like, you can't trust Lorca, blah, blah, blah. And he's like, well, that's not your Lorca, that's my Lorca. And then she, like, kind of does this thing where she sees a bright light because she's like, oh, well, Jojo, or whatever, her character's like, well, that's the only difference between your version and us is, like, you know, the photosensitive, that's how you can tell us apart. So, of course,
our world is darker or something.
So the big reveal is that the Lorca that we've seen this whole season is a Terran from the mirror universe. Yes. And this is what he's been doing to get back to his own world because he tried to run a coup on the Emperor. And that's now the rest of the season is him trying to do this coup against her again. And then you have Burnham who's working with her, but not really. And they're just trying to get back and da 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 da. And then we find out that Ash Tyler is because we find this out here as well.
Yeah, this still to this day bothers me.
So Laurel wasn't Ash's, so then it was revealed, because Ash keeps drawing to her, so he keeps going back to her, and we find out that she's not just her torturer, they were apparently lovers. Because they show them that they were doing it.
Yeah.
But then, it's also more revealed that Ash Tyler is Volk.
Yeah.
He is Klingon. And this whole torture scenes that you see of him being, all these medical procedures and torture him, no, these are all medical procedures to make him look human.
Yeah, they basically crushed his bones
and changed his inner organs.
Punched his frame down and made his skin, you know, grafted skin onto him so that he looks human.
So he's human.
Yeah.
Both Ash and Volk are one and the same. And they put his, like, subconscious in his mind, because Ash Tyler was a person.
Yep. So they laid Ash's personality and Volk's, memories on top of Volk.
So that way, and then when the trigger was supposed to be the Klingon prayer, and when Laurel tries to trigger him and it doesn't work, she's like, but it should work, and this and that. So, of course, in the mirror universe, right? Oh, and in the mirror universe, Michael Burnham is the captain of the Shenzhou.
Yes. And
Tilly is the captain of the Discovery.
And she's like the most notorious, evil, wicked, like Captain Killy. They call, they've got all these nicknames, Captain Killy. And
so we find out Lorca is actually a Terran.
Yeah.
And now a big fight starts between Michelle Yeoh's character and Lorca.
And this is what I was talking about, where all of a sudden, like, oh, he's actually this. And, and oh, Ash is actually Volk.
Yeah.
He's actually a Klingon.
He's actually a Klingon.
In disguise. Yeah.
And he killed Stamets's husband.
Yeah, and really quickly and without much fanfare.
And they think Stamets killed him because they found him, like, clutching him. And all these things happen, and they manage to jump back. Eventually, they manage to figure out how they can jump back. They get everything worked out. They do everything they need to do. Yada, 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 blah, blah, blah. And they jump back.
Yep.
Yeah. And when they jump back, Burnham grabs Georgiou and brings her and brings her with her onto Discovery, and then they jump with her on the ship.
Right.
And now they're back into our own universe. But it's been like 9 months, and now the war is not over, but basically the Klingons have almost won.
Yeah, they've pushed back most of the Federation because, you know, we were expecting Discovery to be here to help us, and, you know, missing one ship. Granted, it had the spore drive, but missing that one ship turned the tide.
Yeah. So, of course, in this one episode... Oh, yeah, so they jump back, and like I said, then we have a couple more episodes, and this is called, and then now the Admiral decides that they're going to put Georgiou as captain again and just pretend that they found her after all this time, and they're going to go on this mission and you know, attack Kronos, and so they all get on Kronos, and they plant a bomb in the middle of the planet, and they're going to blow up the Klingon homeworld, but then they decide at the last minute instead, they're just going to give the bomb to Laurel, and then, like, have her so she can, the detonator to her so she can blow it up anytime she wants. So then she essentially blackmails all the Klingons together to stop fighting and to unite as one, or I'm going to kill us, kill our homeworld, and Tyler's going to stay with her. And I'm like, really? That's how they solve the war?
Yeah. Yeah, they're like, oh, the war's over. And I was like, this is it? Like, the entire war.
Yeah, it's over.
It's done.
Yeah. Because it's a bomb.
I expected the Klingon War to go on and on and on throughout different seasons.
Nope, it's
like,
done.
It was always going to be
done.
In the background.
There's a bomb. It's
finished. Like, done.
And Laurel leads the Klingons now. And Tyler stayed with her. And it's done. It's all over. And then, you know, at the end of the episode, one of the last thing we see is... as Discovery heads towards Vulcan to pick up the new captain, they get a distress call from the USS Enterprise and Captain Pike. And so the episode does end with us seeing the Enterprise, which is a much smaller ship than Discovery, and the classic Star Trek music, and you kind of go like, yeah!
And then they go, oh, done.
Yeah. And then we get the second season.
So, again, first season, I was not impressed.
No.
I like the mirror universe aspect of it and the fact that, like, it was spread out over three and a half episodes.
Yeah.
Ultimately, though, I was not impressed with the first season.
No.
I really, like, I was like, this second season better pick up. And I remember you had sent me a text before I'd even started watching. You sent me your login stuff and said, you need to race through to the second season for Captain Pike.
Yeah.
So I'm watching this stuff and I'm like, all right, he said that it's going to be worth it for Captain Pike.
Yep.
It better be. Because, again, I wasn't hating it.
Right.
This was not Hereditary.
Right.
But it was not enjoyable.
It was tough.
Yeah.
So, what'd you think of Captain Pike?
I thought Captain Pike was a cool character. I thought season two was just overall great.
Yeah, I thought season two was overall great. I really loved Anson Mount as Captain Pike, though.
Yes. Yeah, he did a really good job.
I loved that this episode, the first episode of the second season, was very nostalgic because we see the USS Enterprise. You know, they tease Spock in this episode. This is when they finally reveal, like, the relationship really... Because a lot of the season is them working on the is Burnham and Spock and their relationship and growing up and how he hurt her and she hurt him to whatever, it doesn't matter.
Right.
When we see the Enterprise and it looks like the old Enterprise with the colors and the uniforms and the noises and everything else, I'm like, yeah.
Yep.
But basically, this whole second season is about these. What, 6 points or 5 points where...
Seven.
Well, at the end, there's seven.
Well, there were always seven, but they only found five to be.
Okay, all right, fair enough. But maybe you can describe it better than I can.
Barely. Basically, there are these these certain points in the universe where these phenomena have been observed.
Yes.
They call it the Red Angel.
Yes.
Basically, it's this light show of red with a humanoid-looking entity in the middle that seems to have wings. And they seem to show up at specific points. It was...
The Red Angel first presented himself...
It was weird.
...presented themselves to Spock when he was a kid because Michael was running away and in danger.
Yeah.
And they rescued Michael. Okay. Yeah. And then when Spock was older, the Red Angel came to him again because the Red Angel realized that they could communicate with Spock somehow, except Spock took it as his logical brain couldn't comprehend it, so he admitted himself to a hospital, and then there's some 1040, you know. And then there's this Section 31.
Which was always in the original series.
All right, how about this? I'm just going to say it this way. There's an artificial intelligence called Control. And... humans don't run Control. Control runs everything. Humans input their data. Control tells them what to do.
Mm-hmm.
So somehow Control is becoming a super AI, and it needs this information. And essentially what the Control is going to do eventually is wipe out all sentient life in the universe.
Right, because it's evolving.
Because it's evolving and sentient life isn't needed.
Yep.
So this Red Angel, who is at the end of the day is Burnham's mother.
Yeah.
Who, when they were under attack from the Klingons, jumped in her suit and sprinted herself away through time, but went 900 years into the future. And now, basically, whenever she comes back, she's like a yo-yo. She keeps getting pulled back to that time because, for whatever reason, when she went 900 years into the future, they put a pin in it, and that's where Mom's stuck.
Yep.
She can come back and show herself temporarily and always get sucked back.
Yep.
So, essentially, Mom gets to the future and finds out that all of sentient life is wiped out because of this AI. And Mom is trying to stop this AI from gathering the intelligence it needs. So she comes to do all these things. But at the same time, there's these points that show up, like the beacons, like you said. Mm-hmm. But Mom's like, I'm not making these beacons. And the only reason why I show up is because I have to.
Right.
So they determine that somebody else is doing the points. So, of course, that somebody else is Burnham. Eventually, they discover. I'm surmising it a lot, I realize. So that's what they spend this whole season doing, is every time they go to one of these points, they discover something, and they pick – and at first it doesn't make sense, but then by the end of the season, they wrap it all up that they needed all these people to get to where they are. It's almost like if they didn't have this one engineer who I love, this character, off the ship there, the girl, you know what I'm talking about.
Oh, yeah.
She's full of piss and vinegar.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Tilly's best friend.
No, not her. Yes.
That woman, yes.
Like the 50-year-old woman who, like, they show up on this one planet and they find this crash ship that's in this debris field.
A bad debris field.
And she basically is just like, I'm keeping everybody alive because I'm an engineer and people are just kind of like, you know, engines that need to be done. And so they rescue everybody, and she's working with Stamets, and we see her throughout the show, and she is hilarious.
Mm-hmm.
My favorite is, like, when she says something, like, to the captain once, like, just calm your ass, sir. Calm your ass, sir. As the elevator's closing, and just like her character, I just think is phenomenal throughout the whole thing.
Yep.
since we meet her, but we meet all these different characters, you know, like, oh, we went to this planet because Tilly's friend, who's the queen, who, if you watch those Star Trek shorts they have on in between, explains
that. I was wondering about that. I was like, where does this come from?
Did you watch the shorts?
No.
See, I did, and that's where you, that's where...
Because I legitimately thought that maybe I had fallen asleep or something, and I never fell asleep, and I'm like, why am I not getting this?
Because in between the seasons, they released, like, four shorts, and a couple of them are connected to the season series. One is definitely not.
Okay.
But we meet Tilly... Tilly meets this stowaway who ends up being the queen of the planet. And she was ran away because she didn't want to be the queen. She was gonna, but she decided after meeting with Tilly, she was going to, you know, take the throne. Mm-hmm. So when they go there, and Tilly's like, oh, I know the queen. You what? Yeah, I know the queen. And she brings her ice cream, and then they're like besties and everything. Yeah.
Gotcha. Okay.
So we
that makes more sense.
Yeah, so we meet her character in one of those shorts. But anyway, so all these points lead them to somebody or something that they need so that they can – build their own version, get what they need, stop the AI, on and on and on and on and on.
Gotcha. Okay.
Okay. So, of course, then it is, and then we meet Spock this season.
Yeah.
I like the actor that played Spock.
I like the actor. I just, again, just like with Sarek, I felt like it was all kind of tacked on.
Yeah.
Like, why did it have to be Spock? Especially considering nothing moves forward from that.
Well, that's the thing. That's the other thing. All right, so this is Spock's half-sister we've never met before, they've never talked about. You think about the Wrath of Khan when Kirk's like, why didn't you tell me you had a brother? Oh, you never asked. Mm. Is that how they're just going to handle it? Why didn't you tell me you have a sister? Oh, you never asked.
Mm.
You know, and so it just... So they decide that there's this information that they got off this planet, I guess? The satellite that acts as like a planet, you know what I'm talking about?
Yeah.
Okay. They got this information off it that the AI wants because it can teach them everything they need to learn about time travel and what's happened everywhere so that he can destroy all sentient life.
Mm-hmm.
So now the information is on Discovery and they're trying to their solution is we can't destroy it. We tried destroying it, won't let us. We can't delete it. We can't blow the ship up. It takes the ship over. We'll just blow the ship up, this and that. So the only thing we can do with this is take it to the future.
Yeah. Which, again, some of their logic here was a little bit sketchy to me.
Yeah.
You know, they're like, oh, we're going to take it to the future so that he can never get it. Well, it's an AI. Couldn't it just sit dormant and wait until the future?
Well, maybe we'll find that out in season 3, but for all intents and purposes, the AI was destroyed in this season.
Yeah. Which, again, it was destroyed. So I'm like, so why do you need to go to the future now?
Because they are already in the progress of going to the future and they destroy the AI while they're in the progress of going to the future. I know what you're saying. So Spock was going to go initially with her, but now he's not. So essentially Burnham, the Discovery ship and most of its crew, you know, Paul Stamets, Tilly, you know, all these characters that we've met, except for Captain Pike and Spock, are now going 900 years into the future. Is it only 900?
Yeah. Only 900 years.
Well, no, because now I'm thinking, like, because at the end of the first season, basically what they decide is, oh, we're going to disavow. Basically, the Federation decides that they're going to cover up Discovery and all its crew and everything, and no one's allowed to talk about it.
Mm-hmm.
And we're going to pretend it never happened.
Yep.
It's a government cover-up.
Yep.
And that's how they handle the Spore Drive, why we've never seen it. That's how they handle why no one's ever talked about Spock's sister before. Because all the crew and the ship and
everything... It'll be treason if anybody talks
about it. Yes, automatic treason if they even discuss it.
Yeah.
That's how they cover everything up.
Yeah.
So, but there's some good stuff along the way. You know, like, okay, so Tyler's working with Laurel with the Klingons, and then they find out that they have a baby, and then this one Klingon house tries to make a coup to kill Tyler and... Laurel and the kid, and so they can take over, but then Georgiou, who's working for Section 31, shows up and stops them, and then essentially they decide that they have to show that Tyler and the baby are dead, so Laurel can rule without Tyler there, because Tyler may be Volk, who may be Klingon, but he looks human.
And sometimes he's got Klingon tendencies, and sometimes he's human.
Right.
Oh, and did we mention, by the way, that, you know, that whole complaint, the Klingons don't look anything like them? Well, that's because they were prepping for war. Now that the war is over and they're living in peace times, they're growing their hair out.
Yeah, now they look like the Klingons we're familiar with.
Yeah, and they specifically say that. Oh, now that war's done, we're all growing our hair out.
Yeah.
You know, even Tyler, who's growing out the big beard, and he's got the little man ponytail.
So Tyler now works for Section 31. With Georgiou and this other captain, Abel, whatever, but he's dead now, too.
Yeah.
He reminded me a lot of one of the hosts on Chopped, one of the food judges, I mean. The actor.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I can't think of the guy's name. Doesn't matter. So that thing happened along the way. They do a throwback to the original Star Trek series pilot episode with Captain Pike when he's on this planet, which was awesome.
Talos 4,
which was awesome, by the way.
Yeah.
I really enjoyed that throwback that they did. You know, Spock, I liked the actor that played Spock.
Yeah.
I liked him a lot.
Again, that was fine.
I thought he was good. I like the fact that we see Enterprise at the end, and it's Captain Pike's back on it. Spock's got his blue uniform on. I mean, it's kind of cool.
Yeah.
I enjoyed all that. There were some great episodes along the way. Like you talked about, there was the episode where the Groundhog's Day episode.
Yep.
Where
Mudd basically wanted to take over the ship.
Yeah.
And we don't get to see his side of it. We just get to see the show's side of it, or the ship's side of it.
Right.
And he essentially has a time crystal and resets the day over and over again. And again, we don't see like all of it. We'll find out that, you know, oh, this has happened 3 or 4 times. And then the next time we catch up, oh, this has happened 70 times so far. And you're like, oh, whoa.
Because Mudd has killed the captain every time as well. Well, no, that wasn't the first up season because he's killing Lorca.
Yeah.
Okay, I screwed up then. So it wasn't the first season because he's trying to get Discovery and the Spore Drive. Okay. Yep. All right, so that wasn't the first season. My mistake. Because he kills Lorca every single time and gets great joy out of it.
He sure
Lorca
does.
Left him from behind.
He's like, I would think that this would eventually get tiring, but it doesn't.
It just doesn't, yeah. But no, I don't know. Captain Pike was a great captain. You know, we had to have someone sacrifice themselves along the way.
Yep.
In the short of the Admiral. I mean, I don't know. I enjoyed it.
The series?
Yeah.
Yeah. Essentially, this is my broad strokes is watch it. Know that the second season is way better than the first season. And know that a lot of the character development that they do is phenomenal.
Yes. So that was 35 minutes of some mighty, mighty good rambling. Bye. Whatever.
Okay. So Stranger Things 3.
Yeah.
The third installment.
This is
still fairly new, but let's dive into this because we've seen all 8 episodes.
Yeah, we have. So this takes place, what, summer of 84?
Yep.
85, something like that?
I think it's 85.
Yeah, 85. So we find they got Russians in this one. Essentially, the Russians are trying to open the gate back up.
This was the quintessential 80s
movie.
I mean, they had the mall. They had New Coke.
Yes.
They had classic Doritos. They had Slurpees. They had the hair.
Doritos.
They had the fashion.
They had the Doritos with the clear bag. I missed that.
They had the evil Russians that are trying to foil the Americans and are underneath the mall. I mean, they had the Spies Like Us elevator that goes down to the underground bunker.
Yes.
Like, they had everything.
I don't really want to spoil this whole lot. I want people to watch it.
Yes, absolutely. I would like to talk high points and low points.
Yes.
If you don't mind.
I don't mind at all.
High points, definitely the duet.
In the 8th
episode,
yes. Oh my
the
God.
Duet was phenomenal.
It really was. Yeah.
And that girl was getting into it. She had the hands going and everything. Yeah. I dug it. I dug it hard.
I enjoyed Elle going to the mall for the first time.
Yes.
And trying on all kinds of different clothes. And essentially we got to see 80s fashion in a nutshell in a montage.
Yes.
Yeah.
Which the montage was first popularized in the 80s. So.
Yes. I also like when... I can't think of his name, but the black kid is drinking the new Coke. And
Lucas.
And his friend's like, what are you doing? I like it. What do you mean you like it? And so he starts singing the praises of new Coke. It's twice as sweet and why it's so good. It's hilarious.
Yeah, yeah. I liked the independence of Elle. I really liked that we thought we knew what Hopper was feeling,
yes.
You know, about Mike and Elle kissing so much, and it wasn't until the very end that we got the whole story, and then it was really touching.
It was, yes.
That was really good.
Hopper was great. Yeah.
I really liked the scene where he basically threw the guy out with the keys, and he's like, go figure it out. And they're like, do I hear the engine running? And he's like,
He's not going anywhere.
I love Brett Gelman.
Mm-hmm.
I loved him as Bald Eagle. The code names. Bald Eagle, Scoops Troop, and Griswold Family.
Yes. Yeah.
Yes. Awesome.
yeah, really, you should just go watch it.
I love the fact that Steve, we always seem to forget this, but Steve was the bully in the first season.
Yes.
Steve was the beautiful-haired douchebag, and
yes.
Robin, the new character, who's awesome, actually calls him on that and calls back to it and says, you know, you'd walk into class every day late, you know, with your croissant sandwich, and, yeah. you know, you had the beautiful hair, and you could do no wrong, and I hated you so much. Did you know that that's Uma Thurman's daughter?
Robin?
Yeah.
Whatever.
Scoop's Troop?
Yeah, that's Ethan Hawke's daughter.
Ethan Hawke and Uma Thurman's
daughter. Yeah. I didn't realize that Uma Thurman was her mom, but I did know that that was Ethan Hawke's daughter, because I remember seeing something about him when I looked her up.
Yeah.
Oh, that's cool.
They made a very pretty daughter.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you should definitely check this out. We may go into more of it later on.
I like how Steve likes all the kids.
And she actually says that. She's like, how many kids do you have? Down point, Mike.
Mike's an asshole.
Mike is a complete asshole. And I know you could say that it's a teenage boy thing, but he's just a little punk bitch.
Yeah.
You know? And poor Will.
Yeah.
I felt bad for Will. Like, that I was did. Not
Will
a
just wants
point.
To
that
hang
was...
out. Will just... But, you know, Will went through the same thing that a lot of kids go through. Will just wants to hang out with his friends like things used to be and play Dungeons & Dragons. And two of his friends were just in girls. The other friends are off doing something else, but he was away at Camp Nowhere for the summer or for, you know, majority of the summer.
He came back with a girlfriend, air quotes.
Yeah, and he came back, and now things just aren't like they were, and poor Will just wants things to be the way they were.
Yeah.
And his friends aren't interested in that, and that happens. That's a real-life scenario right there.
It is. It really is.
Billy?
Billy was the typical 80s bad guy, you know? I'm going to steal your mom.
Yep.
Like, all the moms liked him, and he had sex with one of them.
Yeah.
And then, well, no, he didn't. He was
going to.
But he crashed his car.
He crashed his car, and then things happened.
Yeah.
The Upside Down world comes back essentially because of the Russians. The Russians are trying to open the gate. They're trying to just open the gate to get the power, and of course...
The power of voodoo.
They can't get it in Russia, so now they're over there, and Hawkins trying to open the gate. And it's essentially because you have Dustin and the Scoops crew, plus you have Hopper and his group, and then you have the other group. So you have the three kind of four different kind of groups all working on the same thing through the eight episodes. And eventually, by the end of the seventh episode, beginning of the episode, they're all together.
Yep.
And unison or whatever. So that was kind of really cool the way they told the story that way. But yeah, I liked it a lot. They really showed us how fun the mall used to be.
Yeah. Oh, God. It made me want to go to a mall.
Yeah.
Even though they don't exist
even
like
though
that
they lame.
Anymore.
Yeah, they're lame now.
They're lame.
They be lame now. That mall even had a movie theater in it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Malls just aren't like they used to be. But yeah, it's typical 80s, mid-80s. Like you said, New Coke, Burger King, Doritos, evil Russians. Oh,
but
tons.
It didn't annoy me like Michael Bay's product placement.
Correct.
You know, this was legit.
Evil Russians, I mean, 7-Eleven, Slurpees.
Now, into a little bit of spoiler, I just want to talk about this real quick. The PS at the end.
Yeah.
Do you think that...
Yeah. I do.
I do, too.
Okay.
Yeah. If you've watched that far, you'll know exactly what we're talking about.
And obviously, like, we don't see the Demogorgon through the whole episode.
Well, it wasn't the Demogorgon this time. It was the Mind Flayer.
Right, the Mind Flayer, yes. Yep. But then we do see the Demogorgon at the end. In the
well,
PS.
We see that, yes. Yes.
The PS we see. So the Demogorgon's still around.
Well, one of them. Those were the Demodogs.
Yes. And the Russian... No, that was the Demogorgon, because he stood up.
Right.
But the Russians have him.
Yep.
So, I wonder if the next season... Or, sorry, the next Stranger Things 4, you know, still going to be fighting them dirty Russians.
They did say that the next one may not actually take place in Hawkins. It may be more... Because, you know, some people moved away, and...
Yeah.
You got the Russians doing their thing wherever that was. That was a really deep tunnel. Like watching all those stairs go down and down and down.
Yeah, that was a deep tunnel.
Because who's going to climb back up those stairs? I don't even like climbing like three stories at work. Can you imagine that many stairs?
Yeah, no, that's a bunch of horseshit.
It's ridiculous.
And then last but not least, Far From Home.
Spider-Man Far From Home. So this is the latest Marvel movie. It's the first one since Endgame.
Yeah.
Since the quote-unquote end of the third... What? It's not third season. What is it?
Phase 3?
Yes, Phase 3. Thank you.
Yeah.
So it's the first one since the end of Phase 3. This is the kickoff of Phase 4. We have not been given any solid information about the next movies that will be coming up. We were told after this movie came out we would be.
They called it the blip.
Yes.
And Kevin Feige said, well, the snap was when everyone disappeared, and the blip is when everyone came back.
Yep. And so we got to see their take on that, you know, with the pep rally.
Okay, see, that's what I enjoyed the most, was like, we have the pep rally, you see the snap, everyone disappears, and then when the blip happens, they all come back right where they were when they disappeared, but now it's in the middle of a basketball game.
Yep.
They all just showed up, like the band did, people crash into them, and the band's still playing, and yep. Yeah.
And they acknowledged it and then moved right on.
Yes.
And then kind of joked about it throughout the movie.
Well, yeah, because like Aunt May was saying how when she blipped back in, someone else was living in her apartment. The wife thought that her husband was having an affair, that I was the mistress, and on and on and on.
And, so. And it's a support group for people who were displaced by the blip.
Yes.
Because, you know, in 5 years, the world moved on. Although you got to figure, this is what bothered me. Like, if there were half as many people on the planet, was there really a housing crisis? Like, why would other people need to have moved into those apartments?
I know what you're saying, yeah.
So that just seemed kind of weird to me, but whatever.
But no one's going to let an apartment sit vacant for 5 years. Someone's to move in, they're going to let them move in.
Yeah. So they kind of acknowledge that. They joke about it, but they move on.
Spider-Man and his group is going on a class trip to Europe, and he just wants to go. He doesn't want to fight crime. He doesn't want to be a superhero. He just wants to be a kid.
Yeah. So if Stranger Things 3 was a quintessential 80s movie, then this one was a quintessential teenage rom-com.
Yes.
Essentially. I mean, this one, everything from Ned and Betty getting together on the plane and then breaking up by the end was absolutely quintessentially teenage kid.
Yes, and especially how the only thing that Peter Parker wanted to do was hook up with MJ, as far as like...
But not even like hook up.
No, not in that respect either, but he just wanted to like sit on the plane and watch movies with her and spend time with her, and he was going to buy her a Black Dahlia glass necklace in Italy and give it to her at the Eiffel Tower and on and on and on, because he likes her and he wanted to be romantic.
And he was going to profess his feelings to her.
Yes, and nothing worked out for him.
No, he gets dragged in. And again, we don't need to go beat by beat on this.
Right.
But he gets dragged in by Nick Fury, to a global scale catastrophe. These four beings, these elemental beings, have existed since the beginning of time. They've showed up in mythology. And Quentin Beck is here from another Earth.
Yeah, he introduced... this was clever, because they introduce as being the mirror universe, but then by the end they go, oh, but there's no mirror universe.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Except that there still is, because the Ancient One has mentioned it in Doctor Strange.
Yes, and...
She's talked about where would you be on this, you know, in an alternate universe.
And Spider-Man starts theorizing about it with Quentin, about the mirror universe and what it means and this and that and everything, and everyone kind of just stares in the room and... You know, they kind of they goes by, but ultimately you have Mysterio, who's fighting the elements, the elementals or whatever, and Spider-Man's been given these fancy glasses called Edith. Even in death, I'm still the hero.
Dead, I'm the hero. Yeah,
which is essentially giving Spider-Man or Peter Parker access to Tony Stark's everything. Yeah,
global security network.
But Spider-Man being a kid gives it to Mysterio after they have their big battle and defeat the final elemental.
Because he's together. Like, I just want to be a kid, and you seem like you'll be the next Iron Man. Yeah. And
then after he gives him the glasses and turns them over to him, Spider-Man leaves the bar they're at, and all of a sudden, boom, it's all a ruse. You know, like...
Basically, Beck put together a team of disgruntled former Tony Stark employees and underlings. And it was really cool how they went back and made it so that that barf, you know, the augmented reality therapist that Tony had talked about one of the movies, I believe Iron Man 3.
Yeah.
That was, they said, oh, Quentin Beck is the one that created it.
Yeah.
You know, so that they kind of tied him in. And then we got back to the original Iron Man with Obadiah Shaw screaming at that one technician about why can't you get this working? Tony Stark got it working in a cave. And that was the main engineer that Quentin Beck hired, you know. So they had all these different – it was kind of cool how they did that. But they essentially put this whole thing together, this whole ruse together to get Edith away from Spider-Man.
And essentially all what he's done is – or Beck has done is that he's not – doesn't have superpowers. He can't fly. It's all holograms.
Mm-hmm.
And the elementals are all holograms with –
created by drone technology.
Yes, and the drones is what's causing all the damage to everything, is the drones are weaponized, so they're knocking over buildings and, you know, breaking firing things lightning. And firing lightning and fire and on and on and on. So he's trying to create, Beck wants to make himself the greatest superhero in the world. So they're trying to create this catastrophic Avengers-level catastrophe that he will thwart himself.
Yep.
So, of course, you know, Nick Fury's there, Maria Hill's there, a couple others. They're trying to get Spider-Man to do what they want. And then Spider-Man eventually at the end, with the help of Happy, is going to try to stop Quentin.
See, the first half of this movie for me was good.
Yeah.
But I kept waiting for the other shoe to drop.
Me too.
And I kept waiting for... I don't want to say I was waiting for it to get good, but I was waiting for the excitement to kick in.
Yes.
Because a lot of it was typical teenage romance drama, you know, watching Ned and Betty, you know, be the, okay, honey, oh, okay, honey.
All right, babe, yeah, babe, yeah. Oh, let's do it together, babe.
Everything going wrong for Peter, you know, on a Griswold level.
Yes, and this other kid that's there now who 5 years ago was a scrawny pipsqueak kid, Brad, but now he's like the ultimate handsome guy and he likes MJ.
Right, because he's now their age.
Yes.
You know, he never blipped out, so he aged appropriately. And, so that was a little bit annoying to watch. When this movie really hit its stride, and I really wish that I could have seen more of it, don't get me wrong, I love this movie.
Oh, yeah.
I've seen it twice, okay? Where it really hit its stride for me, though, was when we got the reveal and we got to see Mysterio being Mysterio.
Yes.
The Mysterio we all wanted to see. Not the hero flying around pretending to be Iron Man.
Right.
But the illusions, the mental fuckery that he imposed on Peter was awesome.
Yes.
You know? Watching him, like, try to jump and save MJ because he thinks she's being thrown off the top of a building, which was very... Green Goblin from the original Spider-Man, like dropping her, and he jumps, and he's actually only like 3 feet up, so he slams into the ground. Or seeing Tony Stark's grave, and then the zombified body of Stark in his armor crawling out and reaching towards him with little spiders crawling out of his mouth. That was some grade A villain type shit. I love that. I wish I could have gotten a lot more of that.
Yeah, that was awesome. And of course, Spider-Man saves the day.
Of course.
Because he's going to.
It's a Spider-Man movie.
Just go watch it. You'll see how he does it.
Yep. Yeah.
And MJ discovers that he's Spider-Man.
Yep.
At first, he's denying it. But then something happens while she's revealing why she thinks he is. And then he's like, all right, I have to tell her I am because we have to just move this along. I gotta be somewhere.
Right.
So then he tells her, yep, I am. You're right. And she's like, oh, I was right. Yeah.
I was only like 67% sure.
Yeah. But yeah, Spider-Man saves the day again.
Because he's supposed to.
Because he's Spider-Man, yeah. And then you get this happy feeling when the movie gets over. Because Spider-Man saved the day, and
he's back in New York. He gets to go on his first date with MJ, and swinging through the street.
Which is hilarious, because they're swinging on the webs, and she's just clutching onto him and screaming.
Yeah, yeah. Not very comfortable with it.
Nope.
Because he almost drops her at one point.
Yes.
And then the credits roll.
Yes.
And then we get the first PS game. Now, let's say right now that this movie was great, but...
Yeah,
the real strength of this movie is setting up the rest of the Marvel Cinematic Universe, Phase 4.
Yes.
And that was done in these two post-credits.
Yes. So the first mid-credit scene is they're right down in Manhattan near Madison Square Garden.
Actually. It picks up the moment the credits started to roll, like when he was still swinging with MJ. This is just the tail end of that date.
They drop right there, and she's like, okay, well, I'm never doing that again.
Which is kind of funny, because, you know.
He's like, oh, I got to get out of here. So he jumps up on top of the thing. And then this news bulletin comes across. And they say that
They basically say that Mysterio was a brave adventurer from another planet, and he was trying to stop things, and Spider-Man killed him using Stark Tech.
And you know, with this exclusive from the DailyBugle.net, and it cuts to J. Jonah Jameson. And it's not just, oh, hey, look, J. Jonah Jameson's in this movie. Yeah, no, no, it's, I can't think of the actor's name.
I'm drawing a blank. Come on. Yeah, you know who it is.
He played J. Jonah Jameson in the Sam Raimi Spider-Man movies.
Yes, and for some reason, he does all that.
Yeah. Oh, damn it. I'm so annoyed with myself right now.
I'm so annoyed with yourself, too.
Well, it doesn't matter. He played J. Jonah Jameson, like I said, in the original Spider-Man movies, the Sam Raimi trilogy, and he's back again now, and it's the same thing like, you know, like...
J.K. Simmons.
J.K. Simmons, thank you. And he is the same J. Jonah Jameson. He's there now, except being the...
Except he's bald.
Yes,
with the hair on the sides.
He's got the crown going on, the mustache, and he's still got the he's still, Spider-Man is a worthless menace. He's a menace. That menace, Spider-Man. And
killed probably the greatest hero the world has ever known.
And then they show Mysterio cutting a video basically saying that Spider-Man did all this. And it shows like a dead Mysterio on the ground, which is a hologram, as you see from earlier. And you don't see Spider-Man, you just see his legs, but you hear him like, yes, execute, whatever. And
because at that time, the original thing was that Edith was saying, do you want me to execute all shutdown protocols?
Yes.
And he says, yes, execute them all.
Yes.
And so all they hear is, yes, execute them all.
And basically, Mysterio just cut together a videotape that basically says, hey, Spider-Man's the bad guy, not me. And, oh, and by the way, Spider-Man's Peter Parker.
Yeah.
And then they put his photo up of Peter Parker on the big thing.
And he goes, what the? And then it cuts to the credits again.
Yeah.
Now, it was interesting. They did that because they wanted to mirror the ending of Iron Man 1. Yeah. Because in the ending of Iron Man 1, you know, he goes out to the press conference. People are like, blah, 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 blah. And he's just standing there. And then he goes, yeah, I'm Iron Man. And they're all like, what? And then the movie goes to credits.
Right.
And then, of course, you know, we get Nick Fury for the first time going, I am Iron Man.
Yeah.
Are you serious?
And then in the post-credits scene, we see that the Skrulls, Talos, and Sauron are actually posing as Nick Fury and Maria Hill.
So it wasn't Nick Fury and Maria Hill at all.
It was, it was the Skrulls, which is really kind of cool. And she's just like, you have to tell him, but I don't want to tell him, but you have to tell him. Oh, fine, I'll call and tell him. So it's kind of really cool that we get the Skrulls in this one as well as Captain Marvel, because it really is tying the universe together.
Yeah.
And so he contacts Fury and tells him what happened, and we see Fury, who's up on the Skrull spaceship in space. Mm-hmm. And that's how it ends.
Yeah.
So, are you a fan of them revealing that Peter Parker's Spider-Man or no?
Well, no.
Neither am I.
They're going to be able to get around it because, like I said, they showed the Skrulls, so they could easily let Peter run around as Spider-Man and have one of the Skrulls be Peter Parker.
I just don't want to have a whole movie where the whole movie is them hunting Peter Parker. Hunting not only Spider-Man, but Peter Parker.
Well, that's the interesting thing. The guy who directed this movie said his ideal for the next movie would be to bring in Kraven the Hunter. I'd like to see that.
But here's my problem with that. I don't want to see a whole movie of them hunting Peter Parker.
No. You want to see...
If it was them hunting Spider-Man, but Peter Parker was still there and we didn't know, that'd be fine. But now he's not only hunting Spider-Man, he's hunting Peter Parker, which means all he can do is hide.
Mm-hmm. But he has to come out because he has to keep his loved ones safe. Because they'll go after May, they'll go after MJ.
But here's the thing. Peter Parker has access to Edith. Mm-hmm. And all those drones and all those cameras and everything else, he could just show the actual footage of what really happened.
Right. Or like I said, they could pull a Skrull switcheroo, or they could do a million different things.
I feel like what they're going to do is that they're going to very quickly show that Spider-Man's innocent, but they can't take back the fact that he's Peter Parker.
Right.
But whatever. We'll just wait and see what happens. Here's the thing, though. If Peter Parker's portrayed as the bad guy, unless the next movie they do is Spider-Man and they fix it, now he can't be in the rest of the cinematic universe, essentially. He can't be in any of the other movies. He can't be in Avengers. He can't do anything else because he's the bad guy now.
Right.
But until they fix it.
Right.
So I'm annoyed.
And I think that's what they're going to do because J. Jonah Jameson is a
shock jaw, yellow wing nut jaw. Right.
And, you know, people are – that was the thing. Remember when it was just him hating on Spider-Man?
Right.
you know, the city was always torn. Some people were like, yeah, he's a menace. And then other people were like, oh, no, he's a good guy.
Yeah, yeah.
So I think that, yeah, basically what they'll do is they'll say that Spider-Man may be a villain, but it can't be Peter Parker. And they'll find some way, like I said, to show him side by side or something like that. So they're like, why would you ever think that it was a kid?
Right.
Just a kid? Yeah. Come on.
I mean, I get that too. But.
Who knows? Maybe we'll even get, like, Spider-Man from the future.
I think I would have liked it better if he just would have revealed that he's Peter Parker and not like, oh, by the way, this was he's evil and this was his whole plan.
You know what would be an awesome thing to do? And I doubt that they'll do it, but what would be really awesome is if they use this as a way to introduce Miles Morales as a version of Spider-Man.
Yep.
So that then they could have Peter Parker standing there while Miles is running around in the Spider-Man suit, and they'd be like, what the hell? Oh, I guess you're not Spider-Man because there's Spider-Man right there.
Yeah, I guess. But Miles Morales' suit was different than Peter Parker's suit.
It was. Doesn't mean you can't wear one.
That's true. Cool.
Cool.
That's it?
I think so. What do you mean that's it? That's over 2 hours.
I know, but you know what I mean. Like, you don't have anything else.
Plus, you kind of blew your load on Discovery, so.
I did.
Yeah. You were in your refractory period when we came to Stranger Things. You're like, I don't want to talk about this.
Yeah.
I'm burned out.
Kind of.
We kind of discovered it up too much.
Yeah, I think we did. It was hard because it's 29 episodes. You gonna summarize it in 10 minutes?
Yeah.
Whatever.
Yeah.
Anyhow, hey, so I'm Superstar Mel on Twitter.
I'm the Quantum Geek, G33K.
I'll talk to you next week.
See ya.